Town Council regular meeting for January 8th, 2024. Call to order. Please follow me in a pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence in honor of our military.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Here.
Councilor
Jaskiewicz.
Here.
Here.
Councilor
Minnick.
Here.
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 Present.
Okay. At this time, we have special recognitions and presentations. So tonight, we have two presentations. The first one will be a presentation by Sarah Luffler, Executive Director for Habitat Humanity, regarding partnership opportunities for housing. Hello.
Hello. Good evening, folks. I have left a presentation for you in front. It's just photographed. My name is Sarah. I'm here as the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of Eastern Connecticut. I am basically reaching out to folks in our service area, kind of letting you know what is going on, what projects we have going on to build housing for folks with affordable mortgages. And we have had some luck partnering with local municipalities on properties that may be derelict properties or not really sure what to do with it, or we have been able to track down some owners and turn properties that have been vacant for a long time into housing. One of the opportunities to partner. So really just here to introduce myself and put Habitat in the forefront of your minds. If you're driving around town and you're thinking, wow, a house would look good there. It's an opportunity to give us a call and to maybe work together to get some folks housed in Montville.
Awesome.
So I talked to a couple of people in Colchester that I guess worked with maybe your group, mm-hmm. and how they took town properties or dilapidated properties. So I think we're very interested in maybe sitting down with you and seeing how that mechanism would work to get more affordable housing. So it'd be something that I'd like to be educated on, and how we could use, you know, like you said, dilapidated or abandoned properties to get, you know, new housing on, you know.
Recycle them.
Yeah.
Right, 100%. Love that.
Any questions?
No, but I'd like to add, many years ago, I volunteered time to work on a Habitat project and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I reached out to someone a few years ago about getting back in touch with that. Never got anything back, so after this, at some point in time, if we could exchange information, that would be great.
Absolutely. Okay. I've been there for 2 years, maybe actually today. we've got a lot going on. We're very excited about it.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Is your contact information on here?
That would have been smart. Probably not.
Okay. Does the planning office have your contact?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. And I
any other questions for?
No. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, the second presentation is by Gorman and York Properties Advisors, LLC. Now, this is Liz Berdiger Planning, who's been working with this company for a while, so this has been in the works for at least probably 6-7 months. As you know, that this is part of the EDC initiative to start looking at different ways we can get businesses and new development in Montville. So,
thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. Let my slide deck warm up a little bit for a minute. I'm Mike Goleman, principal at Goleman & York. We're an East Hartford-based firm. I'll explain a little bit about what we do here in a minute. As you mentioned, we've been talking to the folks here in town about economic development issues for the last number of months. if I can get my, okay. Give me some grief here. It worked earlier. So that's me. I've been in the, that's me with Mark Hare. I've been in the commercial real estate industry all my life, worked in it for over 40 years, and as you'll see, across all sectors and all aspects of the industry for both public and private companies. And I formed Goldman & York about 15 years ago. As I said, we're an East Hartford-based firm. Looks like I'm in business now. So as background, the kind of work we do is exactly this sort of work with municipalities and government agencies. I think we're somewhere a little between 45 and 50 municipalities that are clients of ours now. Most of those here in Connecticut and the New England area, a lot of towns and cities that you would know. We also, that's our biggest client group. We also do a lot of work for institutional owners and investors. They tend to be large hospital systems or large university clients, basically anybody who owns a lot of real estate but aren't really real estate or economic development people. They're teachers or they're medical people and so on. We do a lot of work with lenders, and also we work with the private developers. And in that role, we're usually doing third-party sort of feasibility studies. So that's on my second list here, market feasibility and financial feasibility. The distinction being market feasibility is what's the demand for retail space or housing or office space or whatever it might be, and what does that demand look like from a square footage amount or a building size amount. And then if there is market demand in a given market, what's the financial feasibility? What's the cost of building? What are the available revenues, either in terms of rent or sales prices and so on? So the goal is to figure out whether a given project is financially feasible. Those things that are feasible will get built. Those things that aren't feasible, of course, won't. We do a lot of fiscal and economic impact studies. That's a big area for us with our client towns particularly. So if a town has got a proposal in front of you for a large project of some kind and you want to understand what the fiscal and economic impact will be, that's the kind of work we do. So that's looking at what sort of tax revenue it'll generate, what sort of services it'll need, what additional economic activity it'll spin off or create in your town. A lot of that work is this economic development advisory and support work with our municipal and institutional clients, and it also includes town planning services. We do a lot of town planning related work, updates to zoning codes and so on, a lot of work around making the zoning codes friendlier from an economic development standpoint. And then lastly, a lot of work related to organizations doing real estate work of one description or another. So let's we're going to take a few minutes tonight and kind of go through what's going on in the industry, sector by sector. And I'll go through this fairly quickly. Office, you've probably read about the amount of impact on that remote working or working from home has had on the industry. If you look across the nation, roughly about 50% of the office space buildings that are out there are only about 50% occupied as a result of work, this remote working or work from home. And that's huge. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that impact in a second here, but we expect that that remote working or work from home is going to continue to grow. You know, we went into COVID to some degree with the view that that would be a return to normal, and eventually most people would go back to work in their offices, and that's just simply not going to happen. It's not happening yet, and we don't expect it to happen. It's affecting everybody, large or small companies. It changes how organizations function. This collaborative tech we've all learned to use, whether it's Zoom or Teams or Google Meet, that's just going to continue to get better and better, and that will support the ongoing movement or work from home environment. The recessionary times that we've been through recently, sort of the soft landing we're in now, and the unemployment created were mitigating factors to some degree, but again, we think this is here to stay. The suburban locations where there's shorter commute time and better parking, those office buildings will continue to do a little better than central business district offices that require a 30 or 40 minute commute and then walking across the parking lot or maybe paying for parking and so on. Suburban locations will do a little bit better. We see a lot of what we call the cruise ship office environment, which is this couches and lounge chairs and so on that companies are replacing their old cubicles and so on. They're trying to make the office environment more inviting and more interesting to this the people that are coming to work. We'll see whether that works long term and whether it has an impact on the office occupancy. We're skeptical as a group. We do a lot of this work, as you can see, and we just don't think that's going to be the game changer. The impact of all this on office building values, as you might guess, is huge. It's wiping out office building values at a rate. You know, I remember I started saying I've been in this business 40 plus years. I've never seen anything like it. I've seen 22% interest rates. I've seen all kinds of recessionary periods, global financial crisis, and so on. Nothing has had the impact on office occupancy or office space utilization like remote working has had. And we're seeing buildings in downtown New York, downtown Los Angeles, San Francisco, major office buildings that are relatively recently built that are being handed back to lenders because they can't lease them. And tenants, as their leases are coming up, the tenants aren't reviewing those leases. So it'll literally wipe out hundreds of millions of dollars of value. Roughly, we monitor a bunch of different databases on this. One called collateralized mortgage-backed securities. It's a structure used to finance a lot of offices. Roughly 21% of that stuff is in trouble and is expected to go into default. That's about $39 billion. If you layer on top of all that as a background, that a lot of these buildings were built in the 1980s. So now we're talking about buildings that are 43 years old that are coming up for releasing. Now, it's not just heating and ventilating units some of the HVAC or roof repairs that need to be done. These are now the outside skin of the building, the window systems, all of the curtain walls that are going to have to be replaced. And we're looking at office buildings now built in the 80s where the value of the office building today is limited to the steel structure and the concrete decks, and that's about it. So a building that might have had $80 million in value 4 years ago, 5 years ago, was 80-90% leased, is now running at 35-40% occupancy and is worth maybe $10 million. So the impact on the industry is huge, but the impact on towns and cities is also huge. We just completed an analysis for one of our client towns, the city of Hartford, looking at a number of their CBD, Central Business District office buildings, and trying to assess what the possibilities are in converting some of those buildings to other uses. This is the highest vacancy rate we've seen. This is now, we're not talking about occupancy, physical occupancy, people in the building. This is actually unleased space. So what we're seeing in a lot of buildings, the space is leased, but it's not being used, it's vacant. But if you look at unleased space, this 19.6% of unleased space, roughly 20%, that's the highest we've seen since the 1970s. Never seen anything like it. One of the biggest defenders of this is the GSA, the General Services or Government Services Administration, and there's some data up there. I won't go through it, but it's roughly 20,000 buildings, federally owned buildings, and over 500 million square feet, and about 88 million square feet of that has leases that are coming up before 2026. So you can imagine if you're a landlord that owns a lot of federal government space, you're terrified as to what this is going to look like. Moving on from retail, moving on from office, pardon me, to retail. Retail is really on the road to recovery. This 2023 year just ended. We saw more store openings and closings for the first time in a few years. Retail sales year over year were up 3%. That's not a big number, but that's better than the previous 2 years before that. The holiday season, actually, sales are coming in. We're just now starting to get data on the holiday season sales, but it looks like it's a little bit in line with the 22 holiday season of 5.2%. That's a big jump up from the 2021 periods when COVID was having the big impact. Everybody talks to us about the impact of e-commerce on store retail, brick-and-mortar store sales. It actually represents about 16% across the entire category of retail. And it's actually stayed pretty flat at that number. And we don't see that getting a lot higher in the immediate future. We think it'll probably climb to 20%, but not much more than that. And then what we're seeing in shopper sentiment is that shoppers still prefer the physical stores. They might do some shopping online, but they'll, if there's a store nearby, they'll go to actually look at the product and buy the product in the store. Commodity products, maybe not so much. But specialty products, apparel and electronics and so on, people are still going into the physical store. One of the examples we like to use is if you think about Apple products, there's a company that is in the business of making us do or getting us to do everything online. And yet they are the largest volume retailer, brick and mortar retailer in the U.S. by a huge margin. And that's because Apple customers like to go into an Apple store and see the merchandise and get some advice and so on. So brick and mortar stores are here to stay despite what you might have read. There is some distinction between brick and mortar stores in the central business districts and those in the suburbs. The suburbs, like office suburbs or suburban office properties, are doing better. People like to shop at home, as close to home as they can, and that's showing up. The suburban open air strip center projects are still doing very, very well, and in fact are leasing up at record rates, interestingly enough. Inflation is having a toll on sales. The U.S. consumer is back and is spending, and you can see that in the holiday season 23 sales. But they are trading down. They're moving away from some of the national brands to more of the private brands, the store brands that are a little cheaper, and we're seeing that in a big way in the data. Something to watch is this the issue of enclosed malls. If you look here in Connecticut and you look across Crystal Mall, Enfield Square Mall, the shops at Buckland Hills, Trumbull Mall, Meriden Square Mall, Connecticut Post Mall, I think I've got them all, except for West Farms and Sono Collection. All those ones that I listed have gone into bankruptcy, gone into some level of receivership and been sold. And again, sort of like I was talking about with office buildings, the diminution of value. Some of these projects were worth $150 million from an assessed value, tax value for a municipality, 2018, 2019, and they're selling for $10 or $12 million. So you're seeing the value of something, $135, $140 million in value, taxable value, being wiped out. Huge numbers. You know, think of that in terms of the number of housing units it takes to recover that sort of loss in property tax revenue. And the big issue for these enclosed malls, whether it's Crystal Mall or any of the others I mentioned, is going to be, what do you do with them? You know, they're great sites. They're 100-acre sites, typically. They're usually well-located on a busy road with a lot of housing around them. So they represent good development opportunities if the mall would go away. So the big question is going to be, what do they sell for and what happens to the mall? And we're doing a lot of work with clients around that issue. I think you'll see conversion of a lot of that space to some other use, medical office, Meriden Square Mall lease an anchor tenant, a Macy's store, to a medical office use. We'll see indoor sports arenas. We'll see some of these buildings being pulled down and replaced with housing. So stay tuned on that, but there's a lot of them. You can skip down to the bottom of this slide. There's about 1,900 shopping centers, over 400,000 square feet. Give or take, that's about the size of three Walmart stores. Almost 1,900 shopping centers, over 400,000 square feet, that are in that kind of condition, that are going to have to be redeveloped into some other use. Moving on to restaurants, we saw a lot of closures. You'll see different data points, anywhere from about 90,000 to 110,000 of them closed permanently. Many of those were local restaurants, and those guys typically went into COVID with relatively low levels of liquidity and couldn't survive a big downturn in their business. Or they were casual dining restaurants where people had to sit across the table during COVID and nobody wanted to do that. So they didn't survive. They couldn't hang on long enough. So most of the closings are in that category. On an ongoing basis today, they're still dealing with some of the issues, staffing shortages and increased operating costs, primarily in payroll. And the result is they've done things like reduce operating hours, cut back their menu selections, and so on as a way to try to get control of their business model. The closure rates have stabilized. We're actually seeing now a return to historical norms of rates of restaurant closures. So we think that we'll see that stability continue. We are seeing a lot of QSR, which is a industry way of talking about fast food restaurants, quick service restaurants is what QSR stands for. A lot of new concepts and a lot of expansions of existing QSR restaurant concepts. We're going to see more and more of that, as we'll talk about in a few minutes when we get into a couple of our predictions here, but expect to see more interest in that sort of concept going forward. Hospitality, being hotels, air passenger traffic has really returned to 2019 levels. That's great for the industry, but it isn't showing up in terms of business travel. So we're still seeing a lot of the convention center hotels and so on that haven't come back up yet. The convention business typically runs about 18 months lead time. So I think we'll see in 2024, we'll see some of the convention-based destinations recover a little more robustly. But revenue per available room was up this year in the U.S. This is a Q3 number, third quarter number. We don't have a Q4 number yet, but up about 5.8%, almost 6%. So that's a good sign. We are seeing that millennials, and we'll talk a little bit about this in a minute, but millennials are really in favor of experiences over things, and that's to some degree connected to that discussion about what's going on in retail, where the millennial generation and the subsequent generations aren't as interested in shopping as a pastime or as something interesting to do. They're more about, you know, give me an experience, something I can learn from or do with my friends. So that's showing up in the travel recovery. Airfare and room rates are coming back. Resorts, tourist resorts are coming back. Business travel, we want to see what the Q4 2023 numbers look like, but until the return of business events really sees the light of day, I think it'll take 2024 for that to recover. Staffing continues to be a big problem in hotels. One of the things that's an interesting data point for us, people that do what we do, is far less bookings are being done on a computer, on a website. Everything's being done on a phone, on a mobile phone. And the data shows very clearly that over two-thirds of the hotel bookings now are being done from a mobile phone as opposed to a computer-connected website, as we traditionally. We're seeing that right across the board, by the way, including in retail. This remote working is allowing people to become what you'll hear called digital nomads, so they can continue working for the travelers or whatever the company might be, but they can buy an RV and keep moving around the country and work on their computer from anywhere they happen to be. And we'll see. I think that's a trend that's probably going to stay with us for a while. The interesting thing in the hotel industry for us is the compound annual growth rate predictions are that it'll continue to grow at 8% for the next 7 or 8 years. So we think that is going to represent a lot of opportunities for communities in Connecticut, that there will continue to be hotel operators who will want to be looking at building hotels in your communities. Virtual meetings are here to stay, no question. That's impacting on that business of business travel. We are seeing older hotel properties, similarly to retail properties, malls, being converted to residential. There's a few of those happening around the state already. Housing, single-family residential, that's the average house. Lots of demand out there still, even with rates the way they are, but very low supply. The prices have gone up to reflect that high demand and low supply. The transaction volumes in most markets are down 30 to 50% in terms of the number of house sales that we're actually seeing. Interest rates are certainly dampening demand. We all got used to historically really low interest rates, almost free money, and now that we have to actually pay for it, there's reluctance. But we like to point out that the average mortgage rate over the past 40 years is about 7%. So we're right about where we were. And we think that that's probably where we'll stay. We might see some easing up, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but we think the rates are going to stay in that range. That's still historically about where we'd expect them to be. One growth area in housing is what's called BFR, build for rent housing. So these are single family homes that are built specifically to rent. We're seeing some slower rent growth, but we think that's temporary. We think that will come back. And just for contrast, there was 56,000 units built nationwide in 2019, houses built for rent. And by 2022, there was over double that being built, about 119,000 units. We think that number for 2023 will actually close at around 150,000 units. It's more economical to rent right now than it is to buy a home. That will change over time, but for the moment, it is what it is. So the volume is going to continue to increase. We said 150 this year, where our projection is about 188, 190,000 by 2027. It is very concentrated in the southeast, Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, and so on. Those are the growth markets. But the key data point here is that we've got 83 million millennials who are finally outgrowing their apartments and are coming into single-family houses. The future of that building, we think, will be that these build-for-rent housing units will get turned over to be single-family housing. Multifamily development, this is apartments, basically. They've cooled off significantly, but there's still rent growth going on. It's just a little weaker, and there's more leasing volatility. The lease-up cycles that we're seeing in projects are a little longer. Actually, I would say they're returning to more historic data that we're used to seeing. It is very market-specific. Again, in the growth markets in the southeast and Texas and Phoenix and so on, there's still lots of demand and rent growth occurring. But in our region here in Connecticut and surrounding regions, it started to cool off a little bit, and the ability to push rents up by 8 or 10% every year is limited now. Interest rates took their toll on that. Cost increases, you know, at one point we used to project that the average apartment cost about $225,000 per unit. That number is actually over $300,000 per unit now. Some that we're looking at are around $325 to $350, depending on the level of finish and amenities. So rent growth is leveling off. What that means is that financing has become hard to find in our market for some of these projects. Loan to cost, in other words, how much money can I borrow against the cost of the project, typically would have been anywhere from 80 to 100% in previous years, and it's dropped down to 40 to 50%. So if you think of an apartment project that might have, for example, 250 units of apartments, you would be talking about a project roughly $80 to $90 million in total cost, anywhere from 70 to 90, let's say, depending on the level of amenities and finish. So if I have to put up 50% of that number, that means the developer's got to come up with 40 to 50 million or 35 to 40 million in equity dollars. And that's a big hurdle. 5 years ago, they might have only had to come up with $5 million, and they could do the project. So we're seeing projects stall, and we're seeing lenders do what's called a flight to quality. So where they might have looked at lending on something in a small market in New England a few years ago, they're saying to the developer, rather than doing something in New England, why don't you bring us something in Tampa or Phoenix or Austin, Texas? They feel a little more secure in some of those markets. Self-storage, continued growth. It seems we have an inexhaustible supply here in America for places to put the stuff that we buy. But it's continuing to grow. The segments that are most active are climate-controlled and highly secured self-storage. So the old steel roll-up door with no lights and no power and no climate control, they're still being built, but fewer and fewer. The real growth area is in these climate-controlled, lit, highly secured storage buildings. And what we have seen, which is good for communities where these things want to locate, is there's a lot more architectural detail. If you drive by some of the newest ones, they look like an office building. You really have to look hard to realize that it's actually a self-storage unit. It has what appear to be windows and an entrance like an office building and so on. So much improved over what they used to look like. Warehouse logistics, a lot of activity in this right across the country and even substantial activity here in Connecticut. We are seeing it slow down. You know, the leveling out, if you will, of online retail has caused the leveling out of warehouse logistics buildings to some degree. But the vacancy is still quite low. It's around 4%, which means most developers are going to look at that and say there's still room in the market, depending on the market, for me to build a new project. Cost increases and construction cost increases and interest rates are a big factor there, too. But, you know, we're still seeing huge amounts of this stuff being built. That should be Q3 2023, roughly 600 million square feet under construction around the nation. Every $1 billion or so in online sales generates a demand for about 1 million square feet of additional buildings. The two biggest buildings being built right now close by would be over in East Hartford on the old airfield site by Pratt & Whitney. Wayfair and Lowe's Home Improvement combined are building about 2.6 million square feet of warehouse space. The biggest building, one of the biggest buildings in America actually, is built on the Route 20 entrance into the Bradley Airport. If you go on the left there, you'll see the big building. It's seven stories. It's actually 3.6 million square feet under one roof. It's an Amazon distribution center. And at 3.6 million square feet under a single roof, that's one of the biggest buildings in the U.S. right now. So this slide is Hartford's at the bottom, basically, of the slide. And this is a recent development activity in the warehouse sector. Over a certain size, I think this one was done over 400,000, I want to say, 400,000 square foot warehouses. So you can see the concentration. Remember, Hartford's at the bottom. So all this stuff is around I-91. They want to be close to airports, close to ports, close to interstate highways, and so on. Like self-storage, the architecture and the landscaping, and you know, these things are... Now look, there's still big concrete boxes, but they've really decided that they're going to upgrade the look. Investors like them when they look better. So they're changing the materials, they're changing the roof line, they're adding a lot of landscaping. They're really doing a much better job than simply tilt up concrete panels next to a railway lane. And we'll see that continue. So what are we paying attention to in our world? In the office market, the central business districts, for the reasons I described a few minutes ago. Regional malls, same issue. Approved projects that haven't started, those are running into problems raising the money we need to finance the project to do them. Casual dining and local dining restaurants still are on our watch list. We're still concerned about those. There are still issues around staffing costs and materials costs and availability of staffing. Older hotels, we have a number of those in Connecticut. If they were built in the 80s, they probably need to be gut renovated in a big way. And if you think of the cost of doing an older hotel, I mean, it's essentially sort of a new kitchen and a new bathroom every 600 square feet or less. So it gets pretty expensive to do them. Older apartments, we have a lot of those in Connecticut, and that's what's driving a lot of the multifamily apartment project, new construction in Connecticut, is people wanting to get out of their 1983 vintage apartment building and move into a new one that's got pickleball courts and a package delivery area and a dog washing station and so on and so on and so on. Long list. But that's what people want, and they're prepared to pay for it. Those projects lease up. But what we want communities to pay attention to are if you have older hotels or if you have older apartment projects in your community, you ought to be looking at how competitively or how vulnerable they are to new competition. All of this will impact the assessed values of your commercial real estate sector in your community. And among other market changes, we're recommending to our clients to really look carefully at any assets older than 40 years old. Those are the ones that are going to be the most vulnerable. Either to abandonment because the cost of upgrading them doesn't make financial sense, or because they start losing tenants and they become too vacant. So, how did we get here? Most of this isn't COVID generated. COVID accelerated it or put a fine point on it. A lot of this really started in the 1990s, and particularly in the two troubled segments of office and retail, we just got overbuilt. You know, we like to stay at our company. It's not that we're overbuilt in shopping centers. It's that we're under-demolished. Some of this stuff's just got to go away. It's got to become some other form of development. That is the nature of buildings. I mean, you know, office buildings and retail buildings built 40 and 50 years ago, they're not forever buildings. They were never built to last 100 years. There's a reason the IRS lets us depreciate them over 40 years. They have a useful life. So at some point, these buildings need to go away and be something else. If they have some level of historic or significance or some utility, then portions of them may be able to be preserved. But I think communities are going to have to get used to the idea that there's going to be some level of creative destruction going on where some of the projects you've got in your community are likely to go away and the site will become something else. Going into COVID, any of these older properties were already in trouble. It just wasn't as apparent to us as it is now. COVID made it a lot worse with e-commerce, with the drive to online retail sales, and with the move toward remote working. And again, as I said earlier, technology is really driving this remote working, and the technology is just going to get better and better and better to the point where people will be able to work from home even more effectively than they are now. The reality is, like I said, we just ended up overbuilt on retail and office square footage. So some predictions in this changing landscape that we're seeing. Building designs are changing to reflect open air features and greater flexibility, long-term flexibility in the utility of the building so that all of it or portions of it can be reprogrammed and the uses being made can be changed over time. We're going to see a lot less vertical development, more horizontal. We'll see mixed use, but we'll likely see it in adjacent buildings as opposed to, you know, three floors of apartments above one floor of restaurants. That's just very difficult to make that work practically and financially. So it's more likely that one floor of retail will go next door in its own building, and the apartment building will be strictly apartments. Continued emphasis in building around new technologies, all kinds of stuff related to what you can do with new buildings. For retail and restaurant properties, a lot smaller prototypes, the elimination of dining rooms and a lot of the quick service or fast food restaurants. We're already seeing the prototypes being built that have their takeout only, delivery only. They'll have two drive-throughs where you order out a menu board and you speak to a person. That person, by the way, might be in Chicago. But you'll speak to someone at a menu board and pick up your order at a window. The other two lanes will be for mobile order pickup only. So you'll just literally drive in and someone will bring your food out to you. And these are QSRs, quick service restaurants, that won't have any dining room at all. Banks, same sort of way. Banks actually sort of abandoned drive-throughs a few years ago. We do a lot of work in the banking industry. But that's come back. And drive-throughs now are pretty much a requirement of a new bank branch. Freestanding, there's less interest on the part of restaurants and retailers to go into strip centers where they're sharing space with other tenants. They found that's a double-edged sword because those tenants tend to turn over or they go out of business, and the tenant that replaces the good quality tenant that was there when they moved in is now a tenant that's a lower quality tenant that they don't really want to be next to. So there's very much a movement to controlling their own destiny, and the best way to do that is to build a freestanding location. So we're going to see more of that. National retail chains are seeing their store footprint as more a billboard or a fulfillment center or a showroom for their products. And that's definitely part of the landscape going forward. We're seeing the layouts of stores and the design of stores changing to reflect that. What we call bricks to clicks, we can show from a data standpoint that a very strong website actually drives traffic into the physical locations and vice versa. If you open a physical location in a market, that'll drive people to your website. So we've seen this for years. There was this sort of tug of war for resources in retail organizations between those people in the retailer that were on the online side versus those who were in the brick and mortar side. We're now seeing those very much merge as they've realized that the best way to do this is to work together and present to the customer a unified front that offers both options. that you hear a lot of talk in the retail world about frictionless delivery, which is you can buy online or pick up in store. So I can buy it online, pay for it online, and just drop by the store to pick it up. The pickup in the store can be done at the curb. They'll bring it out to me, or they'll deliver it to me. And stores that never would have considered doing that are now doing that. Specialty retail, we think we'll continue to see very anemic growth, and that's apparel retailers and jewelry retailers and shoe retailers and so on. We think that's going to be very, very slow growing. It'll be steady business, but not really on a growth pattern. The focus is very much on this experiential retail, and I mentioned that before, and this is all about this next generation saying, give me something to do with my friends, teach me something, give me a new experience. That's what I'm most interested in, and we're seeing that the interest in shopping as a pastime or as an enjoyable way to spend an afternoon is kind of gone. You know, if you look at the data for mall traffic in the 80s, people were spending about 12 hours a month in malls. That number now is under 3 hours a month in malls. And therein is the issue with the mall problems. We've talked a little bit about this so far. Cannabis-related facilities, continued growth. We think new retail or office development of any scale will be rare. There's just simply no tenants and no money. Interest rates, flat incomes, flat appraised values, lenders who are exiting the market for only the best markets, those will continue to be make it very tough to make these office and retail projects of any kind of size or scale feasible. Leases have gotten tougher. It's really become for landlords, it's really become a tenant's market, except in the top growth markets that I mentioned around the country. We're going to see a lot of this conversion, as I talked about, of the obsolete. And as I mentioned, suburban is winning and the urban is losing right now. We're going to see projects, as we've talked about, office and retail, that will continue to lose ground and be taken over by lenders and eventually be something else. Interest rates. We get asked this question all the time, and there's a lot written about it lately. Probably dropped by a quarter point to 100 basis points sometime during 2024. We think that's really up in the air. I mean, if the economy continues to be strong as it appears, the Fed's inclination is going to be to keep interest rates high. If the economy starts to slow, they'll want to lower interest rates to sort of revive it. Right now, it looks, 2 months ago, we would have said, going into the Christmas season, we would have said that rates will come down next year because Christmas sales will be soft. Christmas sales weren't soft. They came in fairly robust. So who knows? We'll see. But we do think some level of cuts next year will occur, stay tuned on that. This bid-ask spread between what sellers and buyers are talking about in terms of pricing, that is starting to close up, that's very typical as we come out of a recessionary period, but it will close eventually. It's just going to be slow. Sales activity is going to be slow. If people are selling a building that they're going to have a loss on, think offices and retail projects, they're reluctant to recognize that loss. Kind of spoils the income statement for the year. So they're going to take those losses in sort of metered doses, if you will, over a period of time. The other reason that's preventing people from selling is if you sell it and you liquidate an asset and get 50 to 100 million in value out of it, what are you going to do with that money? What are your options out there for other investments in commercial real estate? There aren't a lot that are good right now. So we're seeing a lot of resistance to sales activity as a result. Capitalization rates have come up as interest rates have come up. We'll see that they'll stay high so long as interest rates stay high. Financing criteria like debt service coverage and loan to value will continue to be tight. We are going to see increases in the defaults and foreclosures in commercial real estate. We used to use the term pretend and extend, and that's where lenders would say, well, we know you're in trouble, and we can see the project's not worth what we have in the way of a loan on it, but we don't want to foreclose on you now. So we're going to pretend that the value is still there. We're going to, even though your loan's coming up, March, we're going to extend it for another year. in the hope that there's a recovery that comes on and some of the value can be salvaged out of that loan. That'll end. You know, the pretend and extend has been used through the savings and loan crisis, through the global financial crisis of the late 2008-2009 period, and it was and it's present now in the market as expected, but it'll end. Lenders will start to get back to business and start to take these properties back. We're in this soft landing period. We are seeing this growth in the Sun Belt markets, and that'll continue. There is a perception that there's a risk premium for things like severe weather events, tornadoes and tropical storms and so on, and that will continue to affect pricing and development in some of these markets. The headwinds that we're going to continue to face are the ones we've got listed here: market uncertainty, cost volatility. Cost volatility has moderated quite a bit in recent months. Interest rates, they've also sort of moderated. We're not seeing them go up anymore, and the expectation is they'll actually go down. Debt and equity costs are still very high, not so much as a result of the interest rates, but because of the loan-to-cost ratios that are being applied. And we're going to continue to see this flight to quality, both in terms of markets and products. The availability of what's out there is narrowed. There's still lots in the B and C class of properties, but that's about it. The A properties tend to be being held on to. So development and redevelopment opportunities here in our region, a couple of critical requirements here. It has to be market research based. Lenders aren't, you know, sort of closing their eyes and looking at your spreadsheet and saying, gee, the spreadsheet says you're going to do fine on this, go ahead, we'll put the money up. They're going to want to see that market research, the demand-based research that I started talking about at the beginning of our discussion. So it's got to be heavily driven by market analysis. Conceptual planning is going to have to be much more extensive than what was done a few years ago. A lot more work within the communities, working with communities, especially when you talk about warehouse projects and so on, some of these big warehouse projects. The mistake some of the developers are making is they're not starting off with a lot of community engagement instead of just filing the application. Less tolerance of risk in the environment we're in, so that's reflected in the loan-to-value, loan-to-cost, debt service coverage ratios, and of course it's limiting the access to debt and equity. If it's a redevelopment opportunity, the opportunities have to be able to be bought at a very low cost per square foot. So that's Crystal Wall nearby here. That's one of the projects that sold recently, I think, for $9.5 million. It had a $150 million assessment at one point. It sold recently without the Sears store for about $9.5 million. The Sears store did sell for about $2.3 million, I think, later. But, I mean, that's, you're down around $10 a square foot at that point. So really no low numbers. They're buying it, you know, it becomes a question of what's the land worth minus the cost of demolishing what's on that property. So we're going to see that. Other opportunities in Connecticut apartments. As I mentioned earlier, we still have a lot of old stock. And we looked at the North Central Connecticut region a couple of years ago and predicted about there was demand for about 10,000 new apartment units. Roughly 3,200 of those have been built, and there's probably another close to 3,000 in planning stages. So even if you take all that into account, there's still roughly demand for maybe 3 to 4,000 units in just in that central, North Central Hartford region. These are upscale, amenity-rich projects. They have four customers, basically. They have fully retired empty nesters, the couple that want to stay in the community, sold their house, but want to stay in the community. They might own a summer house elsewhere or a winter house elsewhere. The second big group is empty nesters, but people who aren't retired. They're still working, but they want to get out of the house. They're going to travel more. They don't want the headache of maintaining the house. The third group is what we call double income, no kids, and that's the husband and wife team of engineers that work at Electric Boat, and they're both making good money. They haven't decided to have kids yet or buy a house, but they can afford one of these upscale amenity-rich projects with the granite counters and ensuite laundries and all the dog washing stations and so on. The fourth group, which is interesting to us, is recently divorced people in their late 40s. And that's people that are no longer in a house. They want the security, typically women, they want the security and they want the amenities, the gymnasium, workout exercise facilities, and so on. And those four groups make up the demand for these projects. So why is that important to folks like the communities we work with? It's because none of those groups are putting kids in your school system. So that tended to be the argument, two arguments against apartments. One is they were typically low-income occupants, or they were people that were people that would put a lot of kids in the school system. Neither one of those is the case. If you look at all the projects that have been developed, and we've probably done market feasibility for at least half of them, they put very few kids in the school system, something 2 or 3 kids per 100 units, and they demand very low services, and they tend to be these upscale, amenity-rich projects. And we can show that again and again. Here in Montville, I think your school enrollment has dropped by about 30%, about 2,800 kids down to 2,000 kids. So you've probably got the school capacity, but if somebody proposes an apartment project, don't worry about the number of kids it's going to put. It's just not a realistic concern. Where are they going? Markets with job growth and where there's transit available and recreation and food and beverage opportunities. You guys are well positioned with all that. The counties that we're seeing the activity are these ones: New London, Fairfield, Hartford, and Naugatuck Valley. Lots of growth in that business, mainly because of the old stock or the lack of available nice units. So we think that'll continue for a while. Other opportunities are some of the industrial development that I mentioned earlier that we talked about a little bit around north central Connecticut. And again, they want to be close to these transportation nodes. They need to be close to sources of labor. They also like to be near similar uses. They tend to share services and labor pools and so on. Conversions of office, lots of ideas. We've done studies on a number of office buildings. These are just some of the options: warehouse and medical and schools and self-storage. Hotels, we talked about conversion to residential. Retail, almost anything, really. I mean, we've seen all of these things being candidates for retail conversion, including everything from, schools to apartments to food and beverage, food halls. A lot of the experiential things, the arts and entertainment. When we're talking to communities like Montville, by the way, one of our, in addition to some of the other areas of focus, if you're looking at your retail sector, really focus on these two things. Don't think of merchandise retail. Think of food and beverage and arts and entertainment uses. That's where the growth is happening, and that's where the demand is. That we expect that to continue. So food and beverage and arts and entertainment is going to be where you're going to see growth in your central business district or your main corridor, main commercial corridor. Last mile logistics, these aren't the great big million square foot boxes. These are the size in some cases down as low as a Walgreens or a CVS. Typically a little bigger than that, more like a Borders Books or a Bed Bath & Beyond, 30,000 square feet, that kind of thing. Co-working space, we'll see some of that as we continue to move down the road towards more remote working. And then some of these big regional malls, they'll be pulled apart and turned into open-air mixed-use properties with a combination of retail and apartments on the site and medical office and so on. Interestingly enough, we'll see continued interest from out-of-state investors. Even people from Texas are looking at Connecticut opportunities. We see that quite a bit. We've done work for some of them. And the reason is that the prices here that for land and buildings that they can convert are lower than their home markets. Our markets, are actually also seen as being very stable. If you're doing an apartment project in suburban Dallas, there's probably a good chance that there's 20 other developers also doing apartment projects around you. That's not going to happen here in Connecticut. So you're not going to be faced with that level of risk profile. We have stable markets with high barriers to entry, but we also have higher rents and prices that make the project financially feasible and, as I said, less competition. These existing aged properties that I've been describing, the view is that if they land in a market with a new project, a highly amenitized project, they can pull people out of those old projects and lease up fairly quickly. They have to come in with the liquidity that they need in the current environment, and a really good plan. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on the demographic and socioeconomic. We could spend hours on this, but just be a little familiar with tapestry segmentation. There's two parts that we look at. Demographics, you'll hear that used. That's sort of age and ethnicity and education level and a few other things, gender and so on. In addition to demographics, we look at socioeconomic data, and that's what you're looking at right now. Socioeconomic data basically just tries to look at how people spend their time and money, how they behave economically in your market. And unfortunately, on this little screen, you can't see it, but over on this side, the three major segments that are represented in your community. The top one is called Parks and Recreation. It represents about 68% of your community. If we had time, we would drill down into what Parks and Recreation looks like from a behavioral standpoint. And by that, I mean, what kind of car do they drive? Do they buy it or lease it? What's their profession? What's their income level? What's their education level? What kind of house do they want to own? And so on and so on. All kinds of data. But when I talked earlier about the importance of understanding your community from a market research standpoint, this is what we're talking about. So you can see socioeconomic analysis done in a number of locations, provided by a number of companies across the web. There are three big ones. We use one called Esri, and their product is Tapestry. And it will tell you a lot about your community. The reason this stuff is really important is because if we're talking to any national investor, this is what they're going to use in their market research. They're going to say, send me the Esri, the Tapestry segmentation profile of the Montville trade area. That's what they're going to want to see. And that's a critical element for people in communities to understand. This is where the conversation's really going to start, is who are the people that live in that trade area, how do they spend their time and money? And this is the data that tells them that. The demographic profile here, community profile, this is looking at age and a lot of other indicators. I'm going to give you this slide deck. We'll send it to Meredith. But you can see on this center chart here, the bottom is age zero. The top is the highest age. You can see where the largest segments of your population are. That's north of 50. And that's fairly typical. I mean, kind of like the decline in school enrollment across the state. So you're not the only one that's seen that. We're seeing Connecticut's average age get older and older. So a lot of our communities, they're referred to as NORCs, N-O-R-C, naturally occurring retirement communities. So that's something we need to be talking about and thinking about. That's critical. Just like school children are critical to the health of a community, the average age of a community is critical too. So that's just a quick look at that. So let me wrap up here in a couple of minutes with some assumptions. As long as we don't get any increase in instability around the world in the form of Ukraine and Russia or China and Taiwan or the Middle East, we don't have another COVID or similar event, interest rates don't climb for some unusual reason, or we get an energy crisis, the price of oil goes through the roof, or some sort of unexpected shift. As long as we don't get any of those changes, it's actually a pretty good time to be in the business. It's certainly a good time if you own quality assets. People are interested in buying those. There is a lot of redevelopment opportunities, places like some of these major malls and major office buildings and so on, and some of the older apartment projects that are going to be available at very low cost, historically low cost. We are seeing emerging demand for new products and services. So we are seeing that change, no question. And one of the things we like to monitor is the amount of money sitting around looking to go into commercial real estate investment. So just to understand that a little bit, if you think of the pension 401k, 403b, whatever the pension plan you're in, about 5 to 10% of all that money you have deducted every week or biweekly or monthly goes into commercial real estate. So as part of their balancing of their investment portfolio on your behalf, 5 to 10% of that pension money is going to go into commercial real estate. It hasn't had a lot of places to go for the last couple of years because of the factors we've been talking about. So there are various estimates and various data sources, but they all come in around about $500 billion in investment that's sitting on the sidelines, typically invested in some form of bond right now, but they're going to want to move it into commercial real estate when the market starts to stabilize. So that money is going to be looking for development opportunities. And communities and developers are, they need to be thinking through what that means. So this isn't the end of the world that we've gone through. It's just another cycle. We've lived through them before. There's always great opportunity as we come out of them. There are some headwinds that we've talked about, some of the uncertainty. But, you know, I'll close with just this comment or this quote from Dickens, the best of times, the worst of times. And that's what we've been going through. So anyway, happy to take some questions. Thank you for your patience with me as we go through it. It's a lot of material. I appreciate your willingness to listen. Thank you.
Mayor?
Chairman, just want to thank everybody here tonight for your patience and listening to this presentation. This presentation is about the market conditions and the trends of all market sectors on a national, state, and local level. Montville, let's face it, we need development, and we're competing with every other city in this state and elsewhere. We have the highways, we have the water, we have the rails, and we have the property that we can develop. And this company can assist the town on a project-by-project basis to evaluate the projects and determine appropriate incentives in order for us to compete and that we can offer a developer such as a formula for a tax abatement or tax assistance or some type of program that will attract them, and that's what this is about. So I thank you for your patience.
Yeah, the 2 points on that, if I can. One is you're right about the competition that towns are in for this investment money. I spent a lot of my life, as I said earlier, running a development, several development companies. We're a large company. We would look at about 1,000 site submittals a year, 1,000. So that meant we were looking at least 20 a week. You can imagine how much time you can spend on that. You've got to go through them very quickly. And how many of those are actually going to turn into deals? 2 or 3? There's a well-known developer in the Hartford area, great developer, does terrific projects. I asked him that question. I said, how many projects do you look at in a given year? And he said, roughly 600. So that's what communities like Montville are up against. How do you cut through that static, if you will, so that Montville rises to the top and people say, I want to look at that Montville deal. Let's go out there and have a look, or let's talk to the town planner or talk to the economic development official. Getting Montville or any of the towns that we worked with to the top of that list is critical. That's how you're going to attract that money. And you are in it, definitely. There's no question you're in a competition for those investment dollars. The other point you made was about tax abatements. At least 50% of the projects that we have seen, probably more, actually, 60 to 70% of the projects we've seen in Connecticut in the last 3 or 4 years have had some form of tax abatement. They don't work otherwise. They don't make financial sense otherwise. And if they don't make financial sense, they don't get done. So communities have had to step up and say, look, we'll give you lower permit fees. We'll give you a tax abatement for the first year of operation and maybe on a declining balance over subsequent years. I mean, that's a huge barrier. We talked to a developer the other day. He said when his apartment project was completed, they did a calculation of what the property taxes would be. His per unit property taxes for every apartment were going to be $6,600 a year. Now, if you think of that in terms of average rents, that's about 4 months. The entire rent from that project, from those units, for 4 months is going to just pay property taxes. That's not counting snow clearing and landscaping and everything else. So it's hard to make the numbers work. And if you're going to compete in this world that we're in, for at least for the time being, I know it's hard. It's a tough pill to swallow, but it is the reality, the market reality, and that's the world we live in.
Mr. Jaskowitz?
Yes, if you would for me. So you work with planning and zoning and pursue a project that they have going, or do you go look for us for our town?
We work for towns. We will do analysis work for developers, but our you know, our, the most of our business is working for towns. That's where we can really add value.
So you'll evaluate what's really going to be good for us that's out there.
Right.
Say, I think I have a place in the town of Montville.
Yeah, our job with our municipal clients is to protect you and get you the best possible outcome of the project. I mean, that's the goal.
Councilor Southern? I have a couple of comments. I was going to kind of reflect on what Councilor Jaskiewicz said. So really what you're going to do is you're going to evaluate the town, which you already have done some analysis. But it would be more of a, these are the types of fits we should be looking for, the types of businesses, the types of, you know, this is available buildings, you know, whether they're old or new or whatever.
Right.
So you're really just going to give us a characterization and then a evaluation and then possible, this is what we should be looking for.
Yeah, that's sort of an economic development strategic plan, if you can think of it that way. So we will do a really deep dive into that little snippet that I showed of the market analysis, what we call a trade area analysis. And there's an enormous amount of detail that goes into that, but usually our recommendation to towns is, you know, the steps are really do that market analysis first and then talk about sites and talk about a strategy to attract the investment capital for those uses on the sites that are available. That's kind of the...
Other than economic development, what about planning and zoning? Would you make possible recommendations of areas that may need to be, the zone may need to be changed?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah, a lot of our work is done on trying to make our client towns more attractive to the investment capital that's out there. So we will look at your zoning processes and codes and tell you where we think there's issues. There are a lot of developers that will start, if they like the market, one of the first things they will do is they will look at that. And if they see things that are they see are going to be problematic, you'll never hear from them. That's part of the problem.
Right.
They just don't call you. You know, there are communities in Connecticut, and off the top of my head, I can't tell you if this kind of language is in your zoning code, but, you know, there are communities in Connecticut that say things like the planning and zoning commissioners should consider the character of the community when...
Right.
If you read that, what does that mean? That's not an objective standard. Or it'll say something like the zoning commission or planning and zoning commission should consider the need for the use. Well, with all due respect to the wonderful volunteers on the planning and zoning commission, they're really not equipped to make that sort of analysis, whether or not there's a need for a given use in a given community. I mean, I like to joke that I'm with you as long as it would mean no more lawyers, but, you know, There has to be a demand analysis, and you need to be able to do that when you're talking about this kind of work. And you can only do that if you've got the data.
Yeah, I believe we got some planning and zoning folks here. I see Bill Pinez right here. In the back. I'm sorry, Ms. Lundy. And do we have any economic development people here? Thank you.
So, can't hear you.
You have any economic development people here in the audience? All right, good. So we may be asking you to come speak to them on an individual basis because this was supposed to be a joint meeting with all
right,
these. I believe they're here, but...
We're not far away and happy to come down and meet with Planning and Zoning or EDC or however you'd like to do it. I mean, that's what we do.
Yeah, so I'll let those... I believe we have the chair of the Planning and Zoning here and EDC. I didn't see who's here, but... talk to Meredith, but Luke can get that arranged if they want to come in to them as well.
Yep.
So, Councilor Yudnick, do you have any questions?
I have nothing.
Councilor, please.
I was going to say, you gave us a ton of information this evening, and I'm really curious to see how it applies to the town of Montville, because I think we're a very unique place between the casinos and a farmer in the same town.
Yeah, you are.
So I'm really curious to see how we can make something happen in the town and get some of these pieces of land that are sitting vacant moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's the next step, is starting with that real deep dive into the market. And there's always answers. You know, that's what the data is all about.
Just thank you for taking the time. It's a lot of information. Looking forward to sorting through it. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you give us a minute, we'll try to be as quiet as we can and take our stuff down and get out of here.
So. Oh, no worries. Take your time.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Alterations to the agenda? I do not believe we have any.
I have something, sir.
All right.
I'd like to add item 5A, the discussion on the status of the animal control facility project and the options available to the town to move this project forward.
Second? You have a second?
I'll second that.
I get it right.
And discussion?
No.
I have some discussion.
There's no vote. We're just putting the motion on the table so that it can be discussed during the meeting.
Wouldn't that be under wouldn't be 5A, it would be somewhere under.
Well, my thought on making it item 5A is all of these people are here to make comments on it, and if we could either get this on the agenda and maybe after that long presentation, maybe we could get some of these people home to their dinner.
I'll make a motion to move it up to the agenda.
We're moving up to 5A? Is that what you're saying? That's what you
sure. Like immediately after we vote on it, we can move it up to that.
All right. All in favor of adding to the agenda?
Hold on, sir. I have some discussion.
All right.
I just want to say that I appreciate everybody coming out here, and I want the councilors to know that these people out here voted for us, and we work for them. So I think it's important that we give them the information that they need. And I want you to think about that.
I wanted something added to the agenda.
That's what we're trying to do right now. So I want everybody to think of that when we vote whether to add this to the agenda right now. That's all I have.
What, say it again now. You want to add 5A animal control facility budget?
A discussion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, kind of like a viability of the project.
On the status of the animal control facility project and the options available to the town to move this project forward.
So we're making it effectively a public hearing?
No, we're making it a discussion. So these voters out here know what's going on.
A discussion amongst us.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And that we would move it up so that with the discussion that the people can speak.
Yeah.
Public
hearing would be good
too.
Well, we have a motion and we have a
second
item and a second. So all in favor to move up discussion of the animal control facility amongst the town council. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Yutnick, you have the floor.
Thank you. So, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. By a show of hands, is there anyone in this room that thinks our current animal control facility situation is acceptable?
No.
No one. Good. We're all on the same page. We have to get something done. We spent a lot of money to get plans drawn up. We have approximately $675,000 left of that $800,000 that we set aside. We just sent out bids proposals. We got back 7 bids. They came in ranging from $2.1 million to $3.3 million. That's a lot of money. I get it. The way I see it, and I've been doing animal control for the past 13 years, so I like to think I might know what I'm talking about with this. The way I see it, we have 3 options. The first one, option A, is we build an animal control shelter here in the town of Montville. We can apply for grants. We might get them. We might not. That option might come with a tax burden to the citizens, because anytime you build new buildings, there might be a tax burden. There's also the possibility that other towns like Norwich, Basra, might want to join with us and come into our nice new facility that we build in our town. I don't know if those talks are going on or if they've happened, but that's one option. The next option we have, I'll call it option C, because I don't like it at all. That's we wash our hands of the whole animal control program and hand it off to someone like NECOG. Hold your comments, please. NECOG is the Northeastern Connecticut Council of Governments. They handle, right now, 16 towns. They provide animal control services with four animal control officers. So as you can imagine, they're stretched very thin. They're overworked. If we did that, we give up operational control. So if you have a problem, you can't call the mayor. You can't call the chief of police and say, hey, this happened. You got to call somebody up in Putnam because that's where they're based out of. So I don't like that option, but it is an option. There's another option in the middle. We'll call this option B. This is the option that the towns of Waterford and East Lyme chose. We partnered with the city of New London, took some money, and built an addition on their facility in Bates Woods Park when they tore my shelter down in Waterford. Now, I know it's not as pretty as building a shelter in Montville, but it is effective, and it solves a couple problems, a couple issues. Number one, it takes care of the animals, because that's everybody's goal, to make sure the animals have a safe place to be and a warm place, and everything's good. When Waterford and East Lyme partnered with New London, we gave them a lot of money, and they built additional dog kennels there. So there are enough dog kennels at the New London Animal Shelter to handle Montville's and Salem's dogs. That's done. And the dog kennel part is the most expensive part when you're building an animal shelter. So if Montville decided to do that, all that would need to be done is to take some of that $675,000 that we already have in the box for this project and build an addition on the New London Animal Shelter for office space, for storage, and for a small animal room. But really, that's just brick walls. There, you don't have to do plumbing. You don't have to do all of the regulations that the state requires for the dog kennel portion. The hard part's already done. This is the third option we have. The option to do nothing is unacceptable. So I appreciate everybody that came out here today. I appreciate everybody over the past couple of days that have reached out to me on online, through emails, on telephone. I've even met up with a couple of you personally. And I appreciate your passion. We need to look at this logically and take care of all the issues. I don't know what one we're going to choose. It's really going to be up to the mayor what we do. But the point is we have to do something. This should have been taken care of a long time ago. And I think if we stay on top of it and everybody continues to email the mayor and the counselors, everybody's email is on the town website. Everybody's phone number up here is on the town website. We're all available to talk to you and listen to what you say. You being here is very important. It lets us know that this is an important issue with the town and one we can't put off anymore. That's my opinion. I know it's not question and answer, so I'm not going to take any questions now, but if anyone wants to talk to me or reach out to me later on, I'm always available. And with that, I will yield to the rest.
I just want to say there's a couple things in there. It's not only the mayor's decision. It's this town council. We give direction to the mayor of what we'd like to do because we're the legislative body that spends the money. We're also actively trying to get the money. Do you guys know that we've actually applied for these grants 7 times over the past 5 years, and we've been turned down? So it's very expensive, and so we're trying very hard to get that money for this dog kennel. My main focus right now, mine, and if everyone in this town council, is to get a new building built, the one that we have done. But we have to have money to do it. We can't just do it and then wait for the money. So we may have to look at alternatives to see what we got to do. Even if we had the money today, it would take 9 months to a year to have it completed. So I think we need to start looking at what we need to do right now. So we're investigating all of these, and we're working with the public safety. They're looking at it. We're looking at the mayor has got some direction to start looking at asking people for money. So we're actively looking as we speak for more money. Everyone talks about all the other projects we've done in town. Why did we do those and not this? Those are all money that came in from different sources for very specific things, like the pickleball courts. Those came in during COVID, and those were done just for pickleball courts. The town dock in fishing pier. That's a 5-6 year program that was started way back when, because we knew a need that we needed a 24/7 boat launch. Department of Fisheries came in and said, hey, it looks like you want to do a fishing pier. There's only 2 fishing piers on the Thames River. We'd like there to be 3. And so they gave us a lot of money to do a fishing pier. But that alone, that's taken 3 years just since we know we got the funding for it. These things take time. So we are actively looking at to get a adequate dog and cat and animal facility as we speak. So no one on this dais is opposed to doing this, but we have to do it. It has to be done. It has to be done a certain way.
And I apologize. I said I was going to put it on the agenda. I took it back because I didn't realize. I thought there was nothing new to talk about. I didn't realize we were ready to talk about New London. I was going to mention where we were at currently during my Public Safety Commission talk. So there is a piece of paper up here if you want to grab it at the end. It just has a little bit of information, mostly what Bob had stated already, but it's everything that we've received about the bids, and there's also a link. You can look at the site plan and design. That's all on the town website, so the link's on there too. But if we're ready to talk about new alternatives, I thought we were more so waiting until we knew if we were getting this money or not. But, it makes sense to talk about it just because, like he mentioned, we've been denied grant money several times. So we do have to think of alternatives. And I do thank you guys for coming. We all want to hear from you guys. I didn't do this just to be on town council. I did this because I care about Montville, and I want you guys to tell me what you think is best. And ultimately, we're going to decide. But your input all matters. So thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Mayor?
I know that this issue has been kicked down the road for more than 6 years, and I know that the need for another facility has been even longer. Every single item that's been discussed here tonight are unknown. We don't know what we're going to get for grants, and we have been refused already 7 times. The latest grant we won't know until March. And then after March, the governor has until May to decide what to do with it. So that's an unknown. NECOG, how much is that going to cost? Nobody's ever talked about what it's going to cost. Partnering with New London, we had a deal 4 years ago, and it was rejected. We don't know what it's going to cost now. To renovate the existing facility, we don't know what that's going to cost. We don't know what it's going to take. If all those things fail, we'll go to referendum, because I'll guarantee one thing, we're not going to arbitrarily put $2 or $3 million on the backs of the taxpayer without the majority of the people approving it. I will find out what each of those things are going to cost, and I report back to you about the grant, about regionalizing with NECOG, partnering with New London, or renovating existing. I will find out, and I will get back to you, and we'll be able to make an informed decision. And it will be made for the benefit of the taxpayers of this town, not the outsiders who are coming in here and complaining about what we don't have.
Councilor Southern? Councilor Southern?
People, no, that's not true.
Hold on. Discussion. Councilor Southern?
So I know that this seems like it's taking a long time. Like we've all said, we know that this is way overdue. And, I see on Facebook, I see your comments and read every single one of them. Grants are difficult. If we get them, we have to wait till we get them to do anything, because we jeopardize losing grants if we start anything. Because I know some people are calling, let's take that $700,000 and start building now. We can't do that because we chance losing it. I know this because I have experience with this, being the chair of Parks and Recreation and some things that have happened with grants in the past. So please know that we are working very hard on this, every single one of us, and it's a huge concern. I like my cats better than I like my husband, so I want to see it, okay? And just give us the time to look at all of the possibilities that we have, that we can offer all of you and for our beloved pets.
Councilor Jaskowitz?
The thing that I was thinking at first when we saw the list that came out from the state, we had the 700,000. I thought at first, well, maybe we could look at that list. Start working on it. It's not that we were against it. We know we got to improve our facilities. But if we did that, we'd still have to send the dogs somewhere else, like the council was saying. Maybe we'd have to talk with New London, and I think the mayor would gladly do that. So we all have thought about this. We really have. It's just a matter of us getting a final plan of what we're going to do. We got the 700,000. If you want us to work the list, then we could go to Public Works and say to them, start looking at this list. What can we get done? So if the state came in another year from now, I'm just saying, we get to the point where they can say, you know what, you've done a good job, and then the facility looks good. Or do you want to go with maybe a portable building that may not be as expensive as you think? Some of these council members have done a damn good job for us of bringing that up, but you go to a portable building. So it's not like we're just sitting up here doing nothing. We're talking about doing something. So please bear with us. I know, guys, I've been around a long time. I know you're going to say typical. No, this isn't going to be. We're going to get it done. We got a councilman over there that knows exactly what's going on, especially that he's done the job for 15 years. So bear with us, please. I mean,
what Councilor Jessica was referring to, there was an
inspection report or two.
There was a town in Texas that wanted an animal control facility, and they got a $5 million bill to do it. And they went online, and there's a modular company that does modular animal facilities, and they were able to do it for around $200,000. And I don't know if that's a good number. I don't know if it's if it's just some kind of thing, but I actually looked up the company. There are companies that make animal control facilities on a modular scale. Maybe we should look into that, because I'll be honest with you, the amount of money we spent, $125,000 for an engineering architect firm that designed something, it may be too big. I don't know. It may be the right size. I don't know. I don't know if anyone can tell me on this panel if that design is the best design for this town and our community. Councilor Kerr?
I have to agree with everything you're saying. Can you hear me out there?
Yes.
So, you know, Councilor Yutnik hit on some points, the mayor hit on some points, and other councilors hit on some points. I'm for one of taking a lot of that and working it together, but the biggest part, I mean, I think you all just seen, we just passed air conditioning in our schools. 600 people came out for $15 million. We're supposed to pay half of it. When maybe that's where the system works. People come out and vote. Come out and vote. Like today, I've been on 18 years. I'm happy to see everyone here. Maybe some of these other councilors aren't happy to see you all here. I'm happy to see every single one, even the former chair back there. See him back there. You know what? To see everybody here, that means you care. That means you want things done. You know, how many meetings do I go to a month? I don't know, maybe 7 to 10. And you know what I'm always pushing now is for to be bonded, for to have you guys come out, to make you come out of your night with your family to say you care to vote. I'm the one that pushes. I think that's a great option. The options that, you know, Councilor Yutnik brought up. Hey, this man right there has got all the experience on. I don't. I can build it. But he can tell you what belongs in it. Okay? And so kind of former ammo control right there. I see you right there, out there, a former, right? You know what?
Not former, yet.
Not former. I apologize. Sad to see you go, too. But you know what? to come out, and this is great. I'd like to see you at every meeting, especially when it's budget side. When it's budget, we'd love to see you then. But you know what? Everyone here has a say, and we all listen to you, too, because you're the ones who tell us what you want. But my point, I think it should be sent out, the whole thing should be bonded, but these other options are, you know, are important too. So that's my opinion.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Anything else? We'll be moving on.
I was just going to add, I'm really proud of everyone for showing up tonight. I love seeing all the comments on Facebook, but showing up tonight is what actually makes it happen. It puts it in everyone's faces that the people actually care about it, and that's what makes things happen. It's just like showing up to vote.
Are we all?
At the end.
They should have a 3 minute.
When we get to item eight.
When we get to item eight, we can.
Again,
you want to do it now?
Again, they went through a long presentation to get to this. If we could give them their 3 minutes now, most of these people, I'm sure, will go home after this part of it.
Make a motion to.
And this is what they're here
make
for.
Make a motion to.
Public comment.
Remove. Item eight. Remarks from the public relating to items on the agenda. So I need a motion to move item eight up to before item six.
So moved.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
So at this time, remarks from the public relating to matters on the agenda with a 3 minute time limit. State your name and your address, please.
My name is Krista Sarah, 46 Doyle Road, Oakdale, Connecticut. I run a nonprofit charity, Harlow's Heroes. My main comments tonight are honestly frustration with our council. You're elected officials to represent us, and numerous council members came to you guys that said, hey, there's been a lot of talk about this animal shelter. And actually, you had hit a couple points, Deputy Chair, that I wanted to touch base on, but you all know that this is a big deal to us. And when brought to your attention, Mr. Chairman, about putting this on your agenda, you wouldn't put it on the agenda, and you said that there was nothing to talk about. And it took Mr. Uchnik tonight, in front of everybody, and to save your face, you guys then decided to put it on the agenda. And I don't like that. I don't like people doing stuff behind my back, because I want to know that the elected officials that are there to represent the town of Montville are doing behind my back what they're going to do in front of my face. When you tell me you're going to do something, when you tell me you're going to get something done, I want to see that it's getting done. And I don't like that I'm seeing certain things being said behind my back and then a complete opposite thing being done in front of my face. The fact of the matter is, you guys are elected officials. You guys have far more information than I do about an animal shelter and the money pieces and how much it'll raise taxes, and that's why it's your job to bring us the information so that we can all make educated decisions so that if it does go to referendum, we can say this is what is best for Montville. Mr. Chair, Deputy Chair, I think it was you that just brought up that we voted for a $15 million increase for our ACs in our schools, in which 600 people came to vote. And yet when we all are going, hey, this animal shelter thing, you didn't think it was necessary to put it on the meeting for tonight. I don't care if you're sitting up there telling us, sorry, like we've applied for things, there's really no news. Tell us something, because we're interested. We want to know, because then when we go to vote, when we have all of the information, you have people showing up to vote that are making educated decisions for the best interests of Montville. Doesn't that make sense? I have a hard time believing that, you know, you're saying that you want people to be involved, then let us be involved. When we tell you something is important to us, say, I'm listening. I hear you. It's important to me, too. And here's all of the information, even if that information is nothing and that there's no new news, because we're passionate about this. Multiple people up here have stood up and said, wow, I can't believe how many people have showed up. A lot of us really care about animals. So please, even if the information is no information, we'd like to be presented with it, because we want to make educated decisions and we want to get this pushed forward. And I appreciate the effort and the energy that is going forward and the grants that you're applying for. I'm sure it's frustrating. But on our end, with no information and not hearing anything, we can't be a part of it either. So please tell us everything that you have going on so that we can be a part of it too and help you make the best decisions for Montville going forward.
Tiffany Williams, 100 Simpson Lane, Oakdale. I'd like to start by saying that I'm in favor of a new animal control facility. I supported the public safety building over 10 years ago when our police force was working out of a toll booth. now with a top-of-line facility for the independent police department, we need to show our four-legged residents the same respect and compassion. I've been to this shack more than once, and pictures and video don't tell the whole story. It's very drafty. In the winter, you have to stuff blankets in the guillotine doors to keep the cold out. Each cell has a heat lamp hanging over it like a reptile cage and space heaters to keep the place warm. In the summer, the split mini air has to be moved around with fans because of the cement wall in front of it. I've helped the ACO put chicken wire around one of the dog cells so that there was a place for the kittens. Now they can't squeeze through the chain link fence and escape. There is no separate place for cats. Just put them in a dog cell, grab a blanket and some laundry pins so the dogs and cats won't see each other. How do you give a dog a bath? Well, in one of the small cells if they're not occupied, or tie them outside to the fence. These are just a few of the reasons why this shack needs to be replaced. There are other reasons are too numerous to list in 3 minutes. I will continue to support a new animal control facility and spread the word. In closing, I'd like to quote Rene Danino from Channel 3's Lost and Pound, "When you are kinder to animals, you are kinder to people."
There we go. My name is Natalia. I live in 50 Williams Road here in Montville. I am a local primary care provider. I have been a Montville resident for quite a few years now. I'd like to mention and start out by saying it's not just us. It's currently almost 9 p.m. on a Monday night. There are multiple residents who are concerned about this issue who could not be present. So please be aware you could basically multiply this room by 5 or 6. I am also disappointed in our town officials. We know you know about the situation. We are asking you to move. You brought up great points in bringing up neighboring towns, Basra, Norwich, etc. And let's see if we can get something done with them. I think that's a fantastic idea. A new building is not a novel topic. You know it's a shame when the transfer station in town is cleaner and in better condition than a facility that's supposed to house living beings. I can promise you that I speak for the majority of us when I say that tennis and pickleball courts are amazing, but they are not a priority for us. Montville is steadily growing. We are on the map in the United States, and the fact that shutting down our animal shelter completely is ludicrous. And quite frankly, an embarrassment. It was built in 1967. As stated in multiple articles, public articles, there are several features in the facility that are in violation of the state's Department of Agriculture regulations. As you're probably aware, there are tons of homeless cats and dogs in the area, some even injured, as noticed by multiple residents. It's sad that we can't do anything for them if they were caught due to the lack of space and the terrible conditions seen in the shelter. The staff there has done a fantastic job by working with what they have, but we as a community and you as town officials should be disappointed in the lack of help we've provided for them. I demand for the shelter to not only be saved, but for a new building to be constructed. If you don't think this is a necessity, I strongly urge each and every one of you to go and spend a day at the shelter that's currently there and volunteer and see if you can stand it. It's not fit for employees or the animals there. Thank you for your time.
Hi, Frank Maselli. I live at 693 Route 82 in Oakdale. Some of you...
Can't hear you, Frank.
It's not. You gotta just talk.
Frank Maselli. I live at 693 Route 82 in Oakdale. Some of you guys know me. I did run for council, and building a new animal shelter was my main issue. I won't rehash everything. Everyone here knows how terrible the shelter is. When I filmed my video there, I was taken aback. I had talking points that I wanted to say, but it took me a half hour just to take it all in on how bad it was. I don't know if everyone knows, we currently don't have an animal control officer. And as everyone stated, this has been a long-term, over 6-year problem. And we know the grants may come in, may not come in. I agree with Billy that just bond the money. You see the people here. I think everybody here supports building the shelter. If we need to do a town meeting like we did for the air conditioning, do that. Here's the year proof that people here want to build the shelter. They will, they'll spend the tax money to do it. I spoke with the mayor last week, and it was a good conversation. I think a lot of the issues we're having here is lack of transparency. You're all saying we're doing this, we're doing that, but nobody knows that. Nobody sees that. You just say, hey, we did this. We did apply for grants. Maybe we'll get a temporary building. The lack of transparency is why these people here are angry. The one thing that I would say that I would applaud what the mayor said, that if it comes down to, if we don't get any grants, if no money comes in, that'll come down to a vote. My thing is, here's your people here. You've never had this many people come to a meeting. Billy said, bond the money. Put that up to a vote now. I don't know if we vote to fund it. If you get grants later, you can apply that or not. No, or whatever. You have enough support here. Mm-hmm. Here's your people saying that they want to build a new shelter.
Hi, my name is Rick Gladue. I live at 44 Cook Drive. I believe that the answer is usually always in the middle. Everybody doesn't always get what they want. The best thing we could do is to take and keep our two officers that we got, and we can keep control of everything in our own area, but take them and move them to New London so they can be put in a decent place. If you guys want, you just spent $15 million, and that's, you don't even know what the cost overruns are going to be. And I know you guys are here, but this town has a lot of people. There's a lot of elderly people who couldn't come here. People can't pay their taxes as it is. We don't even know what's going to happen, what the next mill rate is going to be. You guys spent a lot of money this last time. I'm telling you, the answer's in the middle. You don't even need a referendum. Just take the money you got.
No.
When you gotta get? Oh, yeah. Wait! You gotta deal. Let him speak.
No! Let him speak.
The money can't be transferred. You can take that money and you can use it to build something in the world.
Let him speak. He has the right to speak. It's 3 minutes.
Sorry. You don't have to build the whole thing for millions of dollars. You can keep your officers. We still have control. All we're gonna do is just bring them down to the next town over. And guess what? If somebody has to go down another town over to get their dog, maybe go put it back in their house more. Maybe go keep a better eye on it. There's nothing wrong with going down to another town. Nothing whatsoever. We don't need this. You have the answer in front of you. You have it. You don't need a referendum. Sit right here, take the money, put it down there, keep your officers. And you're good.
Let him
come down here.
And
you
don't
know.
Mr. Wait. You don't know how you're going to
do that.
We
went
through this. Mr.
Gladue,
talk to us.
I can. I'll address you guys. Because I'll tell you right now, we've had this before. We've had a couple times before where we tried to regionalize with, actually, it was the dispatchers.
Keep this way.
Dispatchers. Okay. We're all going to take and build the whole big thing, and the dispatch, none of it happened. Now we got that dispatch center over there. The only one in it is us. You can't count on that. You don't know if they're going to come. But you do know you can get placed down there, and we can keep our people. We don't have to get rid of them. You don't. Then it's not regionalized or nothing. You got to think of everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gladue. Your 3 minutes are up.
Good evening. Carol Howard, 23 Bayberry Lane, Uncasville. Thank you all tonight for bringing this issue up and letting us discuss it. As other people have said, you can tell by the number of people here, this is very important to people and what needs to be done. I do agree with our mayor. We do need to be fiscally responsible, whatever that means, whether that means we build a new facility, whether we go to another town. If we do go to another town like New London, my question would be, what is their staffing? Because we talked about ECOG and their staffing, what's the staffing of New London if they now start to get our animals? So I think we just need to have all the information presented when we come to a decision. And I think based off of the number of people that are here and what goes on in the talks in Facebook, that there's one word that we're looking for all of you. Action. We need action on this. This can't keep going on. We've talked about that it's gone to, you know, bid or whatever 7 times already. Okay, well, stop. This is it, you know. Mm-hmm. Mayor said until May, the governor can make a decision. Well, my expectation would be by June that we can come back to this council meeting at the very latest and have ideas. Here's what we can do. Or whether it's a special hearing, whatever the case may be, but come back and tell us this is where we are. We applied again. We can't do it. Here's what we can do. Answers. Answers and action from the council, please.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Charles Nicholson. I reside at 16 Allen Drive. I am a 44-year resident of Uncasville. Came here in 1980. I just want to let you know that I truly appreciate all the years of your effort to try to get the best for the taxpayers. I realized over those 44 years that sometimes the best medicine doesn't taste well. And I think you've fairly presented those options that taste good and taste bad. Those are the facts. And for the taxpayers of Montville, I think you're doing an excellent job in presenting that information. It's going to be quite difficult going forward. This is not 1980. There's a lot of unknowns. I think the interest that you have for the taxpayers, all the taxpayers of Montville, is the utmost importance. And I appreciate your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Brian Baker, and I live at 560 Chesterfield Road. We've all in the room tonight heard a lot of testimony from the taxpayers and how passionate the taxpayers are about this subject. Our mayor has told us that we are going to hear from him with financial options, whatever it's going to take. So we are well informed and we have 100% total transparency before we make a decision on this. What I would respectfully ask is that once we get these figures together, that we have another meeting, whether it be a town meeting, whether it be a public hearing or whatever, so and make sure that it is well
advertised,
represented within the newspapers, within social media, and everybody, so everyone understands that this meeting is for this one project and one project only. That way, we can have all the options placed before us financially, so we can all make it some sort of an informed decision on our own, what we think will be best. Obviously, this has been, from what I understand, this has been a subject that has been broached some 4 to 5 years ago, and it has progressively got worse. So rather than us making assumptions on what may be and what may not be, we need cold, hard facts in front of us. We need to know if there is going to be a mill rate increase, what that projected mill rate increase could be, whether or not there are potential for grants, and what our percentage of possibility is of getting that grant, or option B, I guess it was, going with New London and taking what we have left of the original $800,000 that was appropriated for this. Obviously, over 4 years, the project, from what I understood, was back about $1 million then. Now we're at, I think the mayor said, almost $3 million in some cases, or $2.1 million. So this project is costing us more money every day we wait to see what we're going to do. It's increasing by the minute. There's going to be increases this year between labor costs, materials, and everything else. So again, just respectfully, if we could put a public hearing together to take the temperature of the taxpayers, once we, so we can be fully informed and make that decision if we're going to go to the polls and do this as per referendum. Thank you.
Yeah.
Rebecca Maurice, 1567 Route 85. I also own a pet care facility in this town and have for 12 years. I do know a little something about putting together a kennel. I've done a lot of research on building and expanding my own facility, and there are options that are a lot less than what you've seen. My question to you is, I've heard talk of going to New London and NECOG. I urge the council to investigate those facilities prior to throwing that out there. I would like to know what the euthanasia rate has it increased when towns have come together and done that. Is Salem even on the agenda? Does Salem know what's going on? Because right now we service Salem as well as Montville. I propose a committee being put together to do research on this. I specialize in behavior for dogs, and I'm concerned that if we're not in the care of our own town and our own community, will the animals be taken care of? Will they be the same animals that they went in? You know, will they get time? Will they be euthanized due to space? One thing you may not be aware of, I've worked with animal control the entire time that I have been a resident, not only, but also a business owner. And we had Montville residents that were clients of mine. Their dogs went missing, 10 of them, over the span of 6 years. All 10 dogs were reunited because of our animal control officers, our community that's invested in it. I don't want our animal shelter to move to a different community that isn't invested in it. I mean, I'm sure many of you have dogs. If your dog goes missing, what's the response time if our animal control officer has to drive 18 minutes without traffic to New London? What's going to happen? A lot of those dogs wouldn't have been reunited if we didn't have an animal control officer in town, because they would have been hit by a car. They could have been taken by wildlife. So I urge you to explore all options. If you're going to throw other towns out there, let's do some research. Let's see if the animals are better off if we come together in towns, because I'm willing to bet that they're not. And I also would like to ask the residents of East Lyme and New London, is your response time better? Is it worse? You know, how much time do those animals get before their petition for euthanasia because there's not enough space? So I just urge you to perhaps consider a committee. I'm sure all these people here tonight would be interested in getting involved in that, and so you actually get some concrete answers and numbers. And I seriously urge you to tour NECOG before you throw NECOG out there. And I would also investigate with the Department of Agriculture whether or not they're doing investigations about NECOG before you throw it out there. Thank you.
Anyone else? Remarks from the public? Remarks from the public? Okay, I want to thank everyone for coming tonight. It was very informative. We were going to have I had asked the liaison for public safety to come up and give a pretty much everything that Councilor Utenick had put out, and we left the handout up here. It wasn't that I was going to try to keep it off the agenda. I was trying to put it out because we technically didn't have anything to discuss. The town council, the way it works is we have to have something to discuss and vote and move on it. We are working on this project. I want to say your attention to this is really, really good. And I'm really happy that you came out. And I will make sure that we get the information out on the town website in, you know, a better fashion. And I apologize that we haven't done that. But I would like to invite people to email me. I haven't received one email. And people are saying that I contacted them, or they haven't tried to contact me. But I'm approachable, the mayor, everyone in this council is approachable, so please reach out to us. And thank you very much for coming tonight. And we're going to move on with our agenda. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have no executive session tonight. So move to Consider act a motion to approve the special meeting minutes of December 11th, 2023, the regular meeting minutes of December 11th, 2023, and the regular or special meeting minutes of December 19th, 2023.
So moved.
Mr. Chairman, I want to point out on the special meeting minutes of December 11th, it's senior, not junior.
Yeah, I've noticed
Item 5A.
I changed it tonight on the thing.
Not that it matters to me, but, you know, just for the record.
Any other discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Copy of the December 2023 financial reports from the Finance Director, Barbara Griffin. Copy of legal bills from Sussman and Shapiro for the month of November 2023. And copy of legal bills from Keller and Sage for the month of November 2023. Everyone get those and reviewed them?
Mm-hmm.
Report from the town attorney on matters referred. Mayor, do we have anything from the town attorney?
Nothing to report.
Remarks from the mayor and administrative department heads include matters referred. Mayor?
Let's start with the administrative department heads.
Okay. We got a couple here today. Chief Blanchett, I see you're getting up.
Good evening, Wilfred Blanchett, Chief of Police. I'll go through this quick. It's kind of our six-month checkup. Obviously, July 1st was our date of inception. It's now January, kind of what's going on. Dan Witz recently graduated from the Connecticut State Police Patrol Dog School, held September through December. Now have K-9 SIG, who's on the road patrolling the streets. In November, I was advised that K-9 Barrett, his last dog, was being added to the Law Enforcement Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. That'll take place on May 11th. With that, it's kind of significant because it's only K-9s that are killed in the line of duty. Because of that, we became eligible for a $15,000 grant through the Stanton Foundation for a new K-9. We're currently in a testing process for another patrol K-9, which will not cost the town of Montville any money. We have a spot in patrol dog school in the fall of 2024, and with that addition, we'll have two patrol dogs covering our busy shifts and still have Officer Vizzino with his canine narcotics detection dog, Gage, for drug investigations. A big thing that we're doing now is accreditation. 2019, the governor enacted the police accountability legislation in response to several high-profile incidents across the country. One of the mandates of this legislation was for all police departments in the state to become accredited. Accreditation is a process based on standards reflective of best practice in law enforcement. Accreditation standards cover roles, responsibilities, relationships with other agencies, organization, management, administration, law enforcement operations, et cetera, basically the whole gamut. Montville PD has tentatively received Tier 1 state accreditation, which will be finalized in March. It'll go before the Police Officer Standards and Training Council. Lindsay Michaels, one of the police officers, has been working diligently, working with POST. I assigned her as our accreditation manager. And she's got us really where we need to be in 6 months' time. Accreditation for the town of Montville shows that our police department is demonstrating commitment to professional excellence in policy and practice. And we're very proud to show that. Had a meeting real quick with the mayor, Lieutenant Radford, on flock cameras. Flock cameras are a device that capture license plates of vehicles passing by. It's called an LPR, license plate recognition. They'll send alerts to law enforcement, something that we're looking at. You may see coming up in the next budget. Many of our surrounding communities are currently using them. Again, for crimes in progress, get real-time notifications of vehicles where they are. We've actually used other towns for looking for a person with dementia that had left, so it's got a lot of uses, and I'm just telling you about that now because it's something you may see in July. Animal control, not to beat a dead horse. Obviously, Chris Swanson's leaving. She's taking a new job, and we're very, very happy for her taking that new job, but she's going to be a big loss. I just want you to know that we're making arrangements to cover her absence. There's going to be no lapse in service or interruption in service to the town of Montville or the town of Salem. Selective enforcement. I don't know if you saw our Facebook post and the thing with Channel 3. We've made, bless you, made a concerted effort. There's been numerous complaints coming in through our online reporting system, many through Facebook. I'll get into that in a minute. For people that are driving recklessly throughout town, we've kind of put out an aggressive campaign. At my request, most of those were, I'd like to educate the public first. You know, there are times when tickets are warranted, I will say that. But for us to get out there and stop some cars and kind of wave the flag, let the people in town know that we're here, I think warnings were good. One of the misconceptions with warnings, I was looking at some of the posts on Facebook, is people saying that, you know, if we give these people tickets, it'll be more money for the town. For most of you that know that, that goes into the general fund for the state, and the town of Montville sees none of that. But we are out there working diligently, trying to keep the town safe, and we look forward to your comments and concerns. And like the town council and the mayor, I am always available. Any questions?
No, thank you. I got a handful of people addressed me about the speeding recently in a couple different areas, and we spoke about it. So yes, I just want to say thank you for getting on that.
There is one part of it is the speeding, but there's noticed to be a lot of really aggressive drivers. I mean, like, just, you know, coming really close to you and, trying to get you to move faster.
You gotta speak up.
All right.
We got to work on that, Barbara.
So I guess one of the things I was trying to say is really aggressive drivers. There's a lot of drivers that are following too close, doing stuff like that. That's a big concern.
And those are things that we're looking for when we're out there too. We're addressing the speeding complaints as they come up, as time permits. I mean, we don't have a lot of people on the road, and I don't want to, get into to staffing. But as time permits, we're getting our officers out where the hot spots or the trouble spots are. But on a regular basis, even our SROs that are driving back and forth to school are looking for aggressive drivers and trying to get out there and make the streets safer. But clearly, there's we're not going to be everywhere all the time,
right?
And we truly are doing what we can. I think that the productivity that you're seeing out of your Montville officers is on par or better than any of your surrounding PDs or the state troopers that are out there right now. So,
I agree with you, Chief. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. You mind? You good? You good? You want to ask another question? Can you hear me?
Yes.
I apologize. Yeah, I just want to thank you and your officers. You know what? I see the officers everywhere, and I see the lieutenant back there too. And thank you for coming to our meeting. I really appreciate you being at our meeting. So, like the public wants tonight, they want to be aware of things, what's going on. The council, that's good for us, for you to do that for us so we can get it out there and how you're getting it out there. I appreciate it. I really do. I see it from our seniors. Seniors telling me that they're seeing the officers in more places than they ever have, and that means a big difference to people, especially our seniors. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other department heads? Okay, I just want to say a little bit more about what the chief was talking about on selective enforcement. I've been having great success in reporting things that have been reported to me for selective enforcement, for aggressive drivers, and nuisance drivers. I think it's next month we'll be reinstituting the on the website for the police log, that everybody will have access to see what the activity is about, what's going on. And you talk about transparency, that's transparency. On the 12th, I met with the PD and youth services to discuss the use of the opioid money, the Narcan distribution, and the free issue boxes, along with the new mobile health van that we're going to have coming around once a week. Attended the firefighters' municipal prohibited practice hearing on the 14th. No decision made there yet. On the 18th, I met with Wright Pierce, lead project engineers and WPCA super for an update on the Cook Drive water tower. Plan to start in January this month or next month, depending upon the construction of it. And that's for the 500,000-gallon, 34-foot in diameter, 100 feet high water tank. On the 18th, a new deputy fire marshal started, John Meagle. He was sworn in. And on the 18th also, we had the windstorm. Everybody knows about the windstorm and the soaking rain that resulted in some road closures and downed trees and wires. And many thanks to, and praise to the four fire companies for their responses, the along with the paid staff of firefighters, the Public Works Department, the Police Department, and the emergency dispatcher, Emergency Director Barnes, along with the new Deputy Fire Marshal and the WPCA for all the work and effort that they put up with during that flooding. It was, and we're going to be getting some more tomorrow night. We interviewed applicants for the Land Use Director vacancy. No decision made there. On the 22nd, I met with the State Board of Mediators on an informal hearing. Waiting on a proposal from the union, the firefighter union, as a result of that meeting. On the 22nd, we had the final interview for the firefighter applicant, who ended up withdrawing on the 26th. On the 22nd, met with the Senior Citizen Center Director, Kathy Peck, who was joined by many volunteers to deliver holiday food baskets. And we had help from the four fire companies, American Legion, a multitude of people. I forgot to bring the list with me tonight, but I promise I'm going to read it to you next month, because it's very important to know the amount of work that went out delivering holiday baskets and the gifts to the children. Hundreds, literally hundreds of people received baskets, and a lot of it was directly due to Kathy Doherty Peck's effort to make sure that our seniors and our kids had as better a good of a Christmas as they were able to have. The chief already mentioned that ACO Swanson has submitted a resignation for employment, and we are in talks with the unions on how we're going to overcome that vacancy to the best betterment of the town. There's a plan, and I don't want to go into it because we are in talks with the union and how we're going to accomplish that. On the 29th, I attended funeral services for the Public Safety Commissioner Tom Peterson. He's a former U.S. Marine, having served in Vietnam. He worked his way up to in employment with the Norwich Police Department as a patrol officer, to a sergeant, to a captain, to the Norwich State's State's Attorney's Office as an investigator, to serving his community as the Public Safety Commissioner. I want to say that his wisdom, his humor, and his contributions to our community will be sorely missed. On the 4th of this month, I witnessed the bid openings for the General Counsel, Town Attorney. On the 6th, we had our first snowstorm of the season, and Public Works worked from 7:30 at night until 6 p.m. Sunday. Did a great job, and I'm sure everyone will agree that the roads did turn out pretty good overall. On the 8th, I attended a pre-construction meeting for a 9,000-square-foot new building constructed on Enterprise in Lakewood on the Route 85 area. And if that ain't enough, I don't know what is.
Well, you set them out for. Any questions for the mayor? All right. Reports from standing committee. Town Administration Rules and Procedures.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we had a meeting. We discussed the a revised job description for the Planning and Zoning Director. No major changes. The HR Director just came in and just checked it out, did some word changes and that, but there was nothing with salary and that. And forgive me, gentlemen, I forgot to put it on the agenda to vote on tonight, but we...
It's all right.
We won't do it. Enough. That's what we had.
All right. Finance, we did not have a meeting. Public Works, Solid Waste.
Public Works, Solid Waste, actually we had a special meeting and a regular meeting. The regular meeting, Public Works Director could not attend, so we did just a review of what was on the agenda previous and in the future. Talked about the church, what was going on with the church, talked about Camp Oakdale, the basketball courts, trash on the side of the road, what's coming up for our maintenance of our buildings. We're also going to... there's some major things that are going to have to happen to this building, new roof, new furnace. So that's going to be coming up to a lot of other things. We did talk about the roads. Another thing about bringing up bonding, about maybe adding more on for to bond out the roads, to do some more roads in our town. Can you hear me? Am I talking loud enough? So, you know, that there's more onto it, but the with the Public Works Director out there, some of the stuff that... We'll be having another meeting in another couple of weeks to refine that. And some other stuff is on the agenda that I'll be talking about. One would be the pavilion. I think everyone here has probably been to that pavilion. So that's going to be coming up on my agenda, on the agenda tonight, and I'll talk more about that. Thank you.
Reports from special committees and liaison counselors. Councilor Karen, Commission on Aging, Nonprofit Organization, Social Services, Volunteer Firefighter Relief Fund.
So I'll start the volunteer firefighters. We are having a meeting at the end of the month to with the chiefs and the finance director and the mayor. So that will be coming up soon. I'll report on that next month. Social services, senior center, they delivered or we delivered 125 homebound meals. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Mayor. You were both there to help with that. Also with some other volunteers. I'd like to thank the volunteers from Home Depot. Home Depot sent their volunteers over to help with the boxes. Seniors helped with the boxes. Other volunteers in our town, again, stepped up. Businesses stepped up. Our fire departments, which always step up, our police, they stepped up. So I can go on and on, but our businesses stepped up. Just ordinary people come together, like tonight, came together, and they helped out people in less fortunate. And it was fantastic to see how much really goes on to that. I keep out of that, on that part right there. But just, I like to know where our businesses stand, where our fire departments, where people who are really the heartbeat of our community that are coming together to help people in less fortunate. So there was actually almost 400 bags given out of toys. We are going to be starting some new programs, which for the life of me, I don't even know what they are. I just know they're on my list. But I'll let you know next month. But that's about it for me on that. My nonprofits will be getting a letter. The nonprofits that we give upwards of $1,000, I'm actually supposed to be a liaison to, but they will get a letter from me saying that I'm the liaison to that, to the nonprofits, too, if I can help them in any way to bring stuff forward to the council. And that's it.
Thank you, Councilor Kerry. Councilor Jaskowitz, Board of Ed, Planning and Zoning Commission.
On the Board of Ed, I got there at a little after 6, and there was a presentation going on about the district English language arts program, a waiver application status, current program, assessment data, and future plans. And that ate up the majority of the meeting. When the meeting ended at 8 o'clock, that's what that presentation was all about for Board of Ed. Planning and zoning, I attended the meeting. God bless them people on that board. For listening to some of that stuff back and forth. The thing that I get out of it, there was an application for dredging down a dock off the end of Dock Road that was withdrawn. I guess there wasn't enough information on that, and the planning and zoning wasn't satisfied, so they withdrew that. Now, that's not saying it may come back. It may not come back, but it may. And they have a lot of items that they got working. They got about 14 items that have already been approved that are out there working. There are other items that they've got that they're looking at. They're pretty busy, and I think they're headed in the right direction. I've talked to them a couple of times, and honestly, our planning and zoning is looking at economic development. That'll be a good tie to that presentation we heard tonight. They're really looking and are concerned that we've got to do something for the town to get us going, to help us out with the taxes. Thank you.
All right. Councilor Lathrop, Economic Development Commission and Water Pollution Control Authority.
Economic Development Commission, I had a conflict in my schedule and I was unable to attend that meeting. I do apologize for that. Water Pollution Control Authority, we talked about the progress on the Maple Ave project for Rand Whitney, which is going good, keeping us out of hot water with Rand Whitney, keeping us moving forward with that. A couple little projects came up that were kind of pressing to get repaired. One we approved, another one we put out to bid just to see where it's at. But aside from that, they have a couple things they are looking into for the future of the WPCA. Kind of, you know, every year you're out there, you're gaining knowledge and information on how things operate, and there's ways to handle that facility a little bit differently and save the town a little money. So we're going to be investigating some of that, and hopefully I'll be able to come back with some good information on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Kevin, the paving and the project on that, I know I've gotten some complaints about, you know, the road and every way it is. It's they can only pave so much. How long do you think the estimated time on that project will be, and how long will it take them to pave what they're doing? I know they've done a good job, but I know there's been the road is going to have to be all repaved anyways. Whole road has to be done.
I believe the road is on the schedule to be
it
paved.
It is, yes.
So right now they're working through phase one, which is complete, and they're working on phase two.
Okay.
And then there's a phase three and four of that project. So I don't know when the complete repaving is going to happen during all of that, or if they'll kind of hit like a midpoint and pave that, but I will bring that up at our next meeting for you.
They typically, after they do a trench, repair a pipe, they'll put a pave over it. But they wait a year to let it settle, because it'll settle in a year.
Yes.
Then you pave it. So whatever they do, it's going to be at least a year, let it settle.
I would assume that there's going to be a little time there, but you know, you're also going through your winter now and then the wet season, so we'll see.
Thank you.
And did you already talk about EDC?
Yes.
Good. I'm sorry.
I mentioned I had a conflict in my schedule and I was unable to attend.
Civilia, Conservation Commission of Public Safety, your new service bureau and advisory board.
Conservation Commission, we haven't met since the last council meeting. We have a meeting tomorrow night at 6, so I will be back here if you want to join me. Conservation's good stuff, too. Youth Services, Montville Youth Services, they're working with the Chris Heron team. He actually played pro basketball with the Celtics. He's got a pretty impactful story about addiction and opiates and his journey to recovery. This is also supported through the state opioid response grant they received. They're hoping for either next month or March to get this presentation going. The mayor's office, Montville PD, MYSB, and the Uncas Health District will also be working together to bring more resources to the town of Montville to address the ongoing opioid crisis, which will be supported by the Federal Opioid Settlement Fund. That's all I got for youth services. Public safety. Many offered their sincere condolences on the passing of Public Safety Commissioner Thomas Peterson. Great guy. He's going to be missed by a lot of people. Chief Blanchette also introduced volunteer police chaplains, Pastor Dominic Brewer and Deacon William Herman. Basically, chaplains provide emotional, moral, and spiritual support to officers, staff, and their families. It's an important and needed service, so thank you for helping to bring that to this town. Fire Marshal Barnes also introduced Montville Deputy Fire Marshal John Meagle. Some of his goals are to educate the public about fire safety and prevention, mitigate risks in the community, and work with the community to be prepared for large events and disasters. That's all I got.
Thank you. Councilor Southard, Farmers Market, Library Committee, and Parks and Recreation.
Farmers Market Committee is meeting on Wednesday the 10th at 6 o'clock. For their first meeting. Library, no report because there was no meeting. And Parks and Recreation, the big project that's happening that started hopefully today. I got in touch with John Carlson, the Public Works Director, and he assured me that it is going on. The floor and the ceiling and sound acoustics are being installed so the kids don't miss out on their classes. The Legion offered space for them to use, which is nice to see our community helping one another. Morgan Mathewson was appointed Parks and Recreation Liaison to the Farmers Market. There was also a carnival meeting last week. Chairman Mathewson will be reaching out to one. We have one more ride provider that we're hoping that we might be able to get to put on the carnival for us, and if not, we will have to go with our former ride provider, but we are looking to find somebody new.
How many providers have you guys have right now?
We've reached out to probably about 8.
Thank you. All right, appointment and resignations. To consider an act of motion to reappoint Mickey Gillette to the Public Safety Commission with a term to expire on January 9th, 2027.
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Councilor Karen.
Favor.
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 Favor. All right. 7-0 in favor.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Point of order. You don't need to do a voice roll call vote for something like this, just for when it deals with money and stuff. So you can do a simple
right, Agnes? Voice vote.
I don't know if that's correct because. Yeah, I mean, you're actually right, but you can never go wrong doing a roll call. But you want me to expedite.
Okay, you know, we don't need to expedite. No.
All right. Consider act of motion to reappoint Gary Murphy to the Public Safety Commission with a term to expire on January 10th, 2027.
So moved.
Second.
All right, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Unanimous vote. Consider an act of motion to reappoint Daniel Beauvais to Youth Advisory Board with a term to expire on January 13th, 2027.
Second.
Any discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Unanimous vote. To consider an act of motion to waive the waiting period for appointments, Rule 14C of the Town Council Rules of Procedures for the Montville Housing Authority.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye. Hey, it's open on discussion. In the future, if there's something like this that has like a rule or something like that, can we attach that as a side note so everybody's up to speed on what the rule is that we're talking about?
Yeah, just to let you know, all the rules are on the town website. Did you want to have them at the meeting, you mean?
No, when people were looking at the agenda, they were saying that, and they may not have known the right source. Maybe we could have like a link that attached to that piece so people can easily find it.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous. Consider an act on a motion to nominate and appoint either Christine Dimmick or Deborah Suarez to fill a vacancy as tenant representative to the Montville Housing Authority with a term to expire on April 30th, 2024. So for this, it'll be a roll call and you will state the name of the person you prefer.
Councilor Karen?
Deborah.
Councilor
Jaskowitz?
Suarez.
Councilor
Latham? Suarez.
Councilor
Sebelia?
Suarez.
Councilor
Sweller?
Suarez.
Councilor
Eaton?
Suarez.
Councilor May.
Suarez. Unanimous vote for Deborah Suarez to fill the Housing Authority vacancy as tenant representative. New business. The town of Montville hereby resolves to refund taxes due to overpayments and corrections in the amount of $3,914.76 as requested by the tax collector.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Councilor
Karen? Favor.
Councilor
Jaskowitz?
Favor.
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 Favor. 7-0. The town of Montville hereby resolves that the town of Montville may enter into with and deliver to the State of Connecticut Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security, any and all documents which it deems to be necessary or appropriate, and further resolved that Leonard Burnell Sr., as mayor of the town of Montville, is authorized and directed to execute and deliver any and all documents on the behalf of the town of Montville and to do and perform all acts and things which she deems to be necessary or appropriate to carry out the terms of such documents, including but not limited to executing and delivering all agreements and documents contemplated by such documents.
So moved.
Mayor, can you give us a little...
Oh, we haven't had a second.
Second.
Oh, yeah, excuse me.
Discussion.
Mayor, can you give us a...
This is a formality for a notarized form to be sent to Department of Emergency Management and Homeland Security to allow the emergency services to apply for performance grants, for example, nuclear safety emergency grants, or any other grants that might be available through the State of Connecticut Department of Emergency Services, Public Protection, and Homeland Security. It's a formality. It comes up once every 4 years during my term. It came up once in 12 years under the previous mayor. And that allows him again to apply for grants or to receive grants from Homeland Security and Emergency Services.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That should be a roll call?
Yeah.
All right, let's do a roll call, please. I'm sorry.
Councilor
Harris? Favor.
Councilor
Jaskowitz?
Favor.
Councilor
Leifert?
Favor.
Councilor
Spelia?
Favor.
Councilor
Slither? Favor. Councilor Eubner? Favor. Favor. So that is 7-0 in favor. The town of Montville hereby resolves to approve the transfer of $70,000 from the general fund balance of the capital improvement plan for the Camp Oakdale large pavilion repairs.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
Discussion.
Councilor?
Yeah. So the pavilion, which we all talk about, where the farmer's market, where people have their children have their birthday party, they have all kinds of different parties. That's a center that's overdue for repairs. We did put money aside for doing the roof, doing some siding on it, replace doors, painting, and stuff like that. Then it was thought of to have the engineer come out. We found that the columns were rotted. The columns were just needed to be not totally replaced. It will be fixed in a different way that the engineer had brought up, and our town, the chair over here, who's an engineer, we met a couple times with the public works down there, come up with one idea, then it was another idea. One idea from the engineer, of course, was way out of the risk of what we could afford in our town. He wanted to tear it all down. Now, that's uncertain. I wasn't heard of. I wouldn't have gone. It wasn't going to happen. So right now, if the council approves this, councilors, it will be put new footings on each column. They will be bringing it up with new concrete. There'll be new rafters put in on where the stage is, a ceiling there, some LED lights, and then we're going to go from there. It's going to be upgraded, so it looks a lot better for all of us to go there to a farmer's market to have our kid's birthday or whatever party you want to have there. So that's the thought of where it is. It's been wrestled with so many different times, but we're at the point now that we have to do it because come June and July, that where the money was already appropriated, who's going to want you there working? Because that's when it's been happening, that's when things will happen. So that's where we are right now.
Is that enough, Councilor?
Well, don't forget, that's an estimated amount. That's an estimated amount.
Is the rest of the facility okay?
So that's the estimated amount right now to do the columns. We've already had a price on the columns already. Okay. So this is a new revised one. With the revised one is then with the ceiling. But also, when I was on COVID with you, I'd asked to have $50,000 put aside for the roof, the painting and stuff. So with that combined,
that's what I was getting. Okay.
Thank you. We should be in the ballpark.
I just want to be clear. The engineer that he was referring to is the town's engineer, CLA, and we push back and we have a more responsible design that will cost less than what they're initially doing. So the $70,000 will be for the column and roof rafter repair.
That's it.
Any other discussion?
Roll call.
Roll call vote, please.
Councilor
Harris? Favor.
Councilor
Jaskowitz?
Favor.
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 Favor. 7-0 in favor. The town of Mount Bell hereby resolves to retain the law firm of either Sussman Shapiro, Helleron and Sage, LLP, or Savage Law Partners, LLP, as legal counsel for the town of Mount Bell with a term of January 1st, 2024 to December 31st, 2025, and further authorize the mayor to execute the fee agreement outlined in the proposal submitted by the law firm.
So move.
Second.
Any discussion?
How are you going to work this?
Mr. Chairman, I nominate Sussman Wilson.
Hold on a second. I got an idea here. I have to note that I have to abstain from this vote. The way I would recommend we do it is we do a roll call vote, and each individual will specify the law firm they wish to enter into contract with. We all know we've had Sussman Shapiro, Helleron and Sage for many, many years. Savage Law Firm is new, and all their stuff was in our packet to review. So I think you all have enough to make a decision on who you would like. So Agnes, just call out the names, and we'll have to specify which law firm, and I have to abstain.
Shapiro.
Councilor Jaskowitz. Sussman Shapiro.
Councilor Lathrop. Helleron and Sage.
Councilor Sussman and Shapiro.
Councilor Sussman and Shapiro.
Councilor Helleron and Sage.
And abstains. So the vote is 4 for Sussman and Shapiro and 2 for Helleron and Sage. So Sussman and Shapiro will be our legal representation for general counsel. And keep in mind that Helleron and Sage has a lot of work with us as it is, and so does Sussman and Shapiro. So it seems like they've been on our town attorneys forever. So
all right. They're going to continue to pick up the work, right? We're not going to pull that all away.
The work should stay with Helleron and Sage.
No, there's a lot of work. That's where I think it gets a little weird is you change firms, and the old firm's still handling stuff, and the new firm's going to start handling new stuff, and you're paying two firms to handle stuff that's old and new.
Yeah, they're going to handle the old stuff. OLD, the old stuff. We've done this many times before, by the way. This isn't new about switching and having the old firm continue on.
I didn't say that was new.
Kevin, look back at your thing about the what who we're paying right now. We still have bills from Sussman and Shapiro when they were attorney before.
That's exactly what I was saying. I would like to see sticking with a firm so they stay up to date on everything. That's all I was saying. I apologize if that was taken the wrong
apologize.
Way.
No, you gave your opinion, and I respect that.
You got a little jumpy there, so I'm just, I apologize if it went the wrong way.
It's not it's new.
You didn't go the wrong
way. I didn't say it was new. That's not what I was saying.
All right, let's move on. But thank you. It's good.
Yeah, point. Thank you, by the way. But appreciate
it. It is a consideration that they take. So, remarks from the public for the 3-minute limit.
Carol Howard, 23 Bayberry Lane, Uncasville. At the beginning of the meeting, the presentation, if I can make a recommendation to the council, that I don't belong at this meeting. I got some of what he was saying. It was pretty good. I understood what he was talking about and stuff like that. But in totality, I really struggled with what does this mean for Montville? So I would just ask that when you think of those type of presentations, that perhaps maybe it's not a town council forum meeting like this with everybody present. That's all. Thank you.
Remarks from the public? And I'll go one more time. Remarks from the public with a 3-minute time limit. Moving on. Remarks from the councilors and the mayor. Councilor Utnick?
Oh, thank you. First, I want to say, Chief Blanchett, 6 months, you're doing a great job. I really appreciate it. Keep up the good work. Under your leadership, our police department is going places. Second, I want to address a couple of questions that came up about the animal shelter, specifically from you, Ms. Howard. about staffing and how it works. The way it works with Waterford and East Lyme, we're over into New London Shelter, but we're not with New London. New London handles their calls and their animals. Waterford and East Lyme handles their calls and their animals. We just share the space. We're like roommates. The three towns split the costs, electric, water, gas, three ways. That's how they do that. Our employees, well, I can't speak for Montville. I can speak for Waterford and East Lyme. We handle all our animals, all our calls separately from New London. We don't respond to calls in New London, and New London doesn't respond to calls in our towns.
I guess my question is more, who takes care of the animals while they're there? Whose responsibility is it to take care of the animals while they're there?
Waterford employees take care of the Waterford animals, and New London employees take care of the New London animals. So if you come in and you want to see a dog, well, it's a New London dog, she's out on a call, you got to wait till they come back so they can show you the animal because of liability reasons. The other question somebody had, she's not here now, but was about whether the euthanasia was going to increase. I can't speak for NECOG, what they do. I can, again, speak for what Waterford and East Lyme does. If Montville comes over, our euthanasia rate's not going to increase because we do things our way, and Montville would come over and continue to do things their way, so there should be no increase. There's not going to be anything... excuse me, any issues with space, because like I said, there's plenty of dog kennel space over there. So however Montville does it now is however Montville would continue to do it if they went over there. And that's all I have.
Councilor Lathrop.
No, I'm good. I appreciate everyone showing up tonight. That was good and appreciated. Thank you.
You look tired, man.
It's been a long day.
No, just thanks again for people coming and sharing their voices. I think it's important, so I'm glad that happened. Even if it wasn't the way I initially planned for it, I think it all worked out well, and I'm glad we got to discuss it. So thanks for coming.
Councilor Karen.
Again, I'd like to thank everybody and thank the council for approving the money to start and move forward with that. I know I'll meet with the Public Works Director about the repairs to the pavilion. Thank everybody for coming out tonight to talk about the dog pound, dog kennel. We will definitely do a much better job to try to get that out to the public, even if we have to hold, you know, I'll talk to Mr. Chairman here about holding a meeting to bring it updated more and what we find out. So, you know, again, thank you.
You might have the vice chair do that.
If you're the vice chair, would you like the vice chair to do that, Mr. Chairman? I'll do that. I don't care.
Thank you to everybody that came out. The animal control facility is something that is very important to everybody here, and we're so happy that so many of your voices were heard tonight. And thank you to the council for allocating those funds for the can't speak at this hour for the pavilion. It's been 3 years since we started this project, and it's a great space for everybody in the town, and I know the Parks and Rec Commission is going to be thrilled. Thank you.
Thanks for everybody coming out. Thank you, Councilor, for all your knowledge on the dog pound. That really, really, really helps. And we should form. I don't know if we should have a meeting with the people, or we on the council have a committee, so we can every month we meet, or prior to that, we can announce to the people where we're going or what suggestions we have. Are we going to do, as the council said, A, B, and C? Then we come up with a final yes or no, A, B, or C. So they can all be aware and feel comfortable about what we're going to do. And thank you, everybody, for coming out. And be careful tomorrow.
So, Mayor?
I just want to add to what I said earlier about the our efforts to get to the bottom of the what our needs are. I have gotten letters from all five of our state delegation, elected delegations, with letters of support to Hartford on the bonding commission to try to get that last grant that we've applied for. And they are all five doing everything they can to help us get that. I've also reached out to our federal delegation for ideas and for them to research to find areas that we can apply for grants federally. And I can promise you that I will work continuously and tirelessly to get to the bottom of this whole thing and resolve it. It will be resolved, and I can't tell you when, but I'll get it resolved. I also want to say I'm going to resolve this problem with this speaker system. I've already started talking with our IT guy, and we've called back the original vendor who supplied this thing, and when they initially told me there's nothing we can do, I say, baloney. We're going to find it's a solution to this. If it's adding speakers, turning up the gain, replacing the system. Because it's people in the center of this room cannot hear what's going on. I know that.
That's sometimes doing direction to sit in the back.
We'll fix it.
So I was talking to Councilor Yutnick, and there was some things that we needed to start looking into as well, Mayor, and that is a video getting the town.
Well, Board of Ed's doing it. I forgot to say that.
So, but it's not really being broadcasted on YouTube or anything. So we'd like you to start looking into how East Lyme and Salem, Agnes has a little knowledge on that as well, of what we can do with getting that established. And maybe we could look at a sound system. I was told that the sound system does work if it's adjusted right. Bill Neal adjusted it one time and it worked just fine. But if you hit the mic gain too much, you'll get too much feedback. And that's the problem with it. It's probably outdated. Maybe we need something better. It may be these mics.
Well, one of the problems is the background noise. The air handlers are muffling some of the sounds coming over the speakers.
I just want to say this. When we went to Groton one time, when I was the mayor, that's how long ago we talked about this, by the way. They said these are no good, this type. You should get the kind that come up with the speaker in front of you.
Pretty good.
I'm just going to say,
well,
it's funny, we can hear you tapping, no problem. Voice doesn't carry through.
All right, motion adjourned.
Second. All
for my goodness.
That was painful.
My legs don't work this
bad. Who, Tim? Yeah, he sits a little further back.
Everybody else
is afraid.
At least I can.
Did you hear me when I started yelling?
Oh.
Did you hear me when I started yelling?
Jersey.
Yeah.
Was it Jersey?
Blame that presentation guy. 10 minutes.
I would never show you.